specialize in healthy and sustainable products for your home. Please drop by, see if you can pick up any of your last-minute holiday items. And I want to say thank you very much to my guest, Kenna Lindsay, for joining me in the studio today.
You're welcome.
Happy holidays, honey.
Thank you.
Okay, please stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Attorneys for detainees at Guantanamo Bay going to a federal judge today to ask for intervention. Intervention into the government's investigation into destroyed CIA interrogation tapes.
The government is willing to destroy potentially relevant evidence, as it's acknowledged doing in this situation. I don't believe that it can be trusted when it says it's preserved all of the other relevant evidence.
Attorney David Reams, please, taken under advisement by the judge today. The father of 17-year-old Nataline Sarkisian.
All I know, I don't have a daughter anymore, 17-year-old daughter anymore.
Lamenting her loss after an insurance company denied her coverage for a liver transplant. Now, that decision was later reversed, but too late for Nataline.
We were hoping so she can be with us in Christmas. I don't have any more Christmas.
She is dead. Today, the family attorney says the health insurer Cigna will be sued, and he also plans to ask the L.A. District Attorney to press murder charges against that company. Prison overpopulation solution? Open the cells and let them go. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
California is being squeezed by budget problems and a court order to relieve overcrowding. So Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is thinking about releasing some 22,000 nonviolent inmates considered to be low risk and eliminating more than 8,000 guards, the Sacramento Bee reports.
Since the 1980s, California's prisons have just exploded.
Mark Maurer of the Sentencing Project.
The prison population has been rising steadily virtually all around the country.
So other states may soon face similar tough choices. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Well, like a lot of people on this last weekend before Christmas, the president's getting out of here.
Waving goodbye to the White House until next year, President Bush beat the traffic, making an early getaway on Marine One with members of the First Family. It'll be their seventh year spending Christmas at Camp David. On the day after, the Bushes head south to their ranch in Texas and stay until New Year's Day. Mr. Bush spent the morning in the Oval Office recording his Saturday radio address, a message of gratitude to the men and women protecting America in the war on terror. Mark Knowles, CBS News, the White House.
Well, not everyone is able to beat the traffic the way the First Family can. Standard backups and delays at many airports across the country. The worst in the Northeast, under a blanket of fresh snow. Thousands stranded at Logan Airport. Dozens of flights canceled again today. He avoids having his bond revoked in a child pornography case, but
I believe I can fly.
A judge admonishing R. Kelly today for missing a court hearing. Kelly pleading not guilty to child porno charges. He missed his Wednesday court appearance when his tour bus was delayed because its logbooks did not document enough rest time for the driver. The sounds of a different kind of jingle bells on Wall Street. Yeah, consumer spending jumping up more than it has in 3 years. The market responding. The Dow up 205 points, NASDAQ up 51, and the S&P up 24 points. This is CBS News.
Holidays getting closer. It's all right, there's a gift you'll find is perfect every time. Let's give Outback tonight.
Let go of your shopping worries with Outback holiday gift cards. Give everyone on your list a taste of the bold, fresh flavors of Outback. Drop by tonight and leave your worries behind.
Let's give Outback tonight.
Get gift cards at any Outback or Outback.com.
Hey, it's Ty Pennington. This holiday, I'm all about granting wishes. So time's running out, but you want to come out of the holidays looking golden? How about fine jewelry? The entire stock is 40 to 60% off at the Sears Last Minute Wish Sale. And remember, when you order gifts at Sears.com and pick up in-store, they'll be ready in 5 minutes guaranteed. So find something special they'll take a real shine to at Sears, Friday through Christmas Eve. And don't just give a gift, grant a wish.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/07.
Epcot, maybe the most intelligent thing Disney ever did, back in business, and CBS's Peter King is thrilled.
The big white ball is open again at Epcot Center. Spaceship Earth has a new storyline on innovations and how they inspire the next generation. Disney says there are also new show scenes, lighting effects, costumes, even a new musical score narrated by Dame Judi Dench, new touch screens, and an interactive component for riders.
Grave robbing, gruesome practice, back in fashion, as we hear from CBS's Jim Krasula.
The state is being robbed blind.
That's according to South Carolina State archaeologist Jonathan Leader. He's talking about the macabre black market for skulls, bones, and artifacts from century-old graves. The state's worsening drought is exposing once-submerged graves in the massive man-made Lake Merriam. Graves recently uncovered by dry lake beds have become a target of thieves. One South Carolina State senator calls it the most despicable act possible. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Say you're looking for the perfect holiday gift. You could head out to peruse, moving from one retail expedition to the next as the holiday cheer slowly drains from your face and you start to resent all the carols and sleigh bells that only remind you you still got nothing for the person who already has everything. Except a sense of direction. So go with a TomTom. It's the world's number one selling automotive GPS. And now through the holidays, you'll get $100 off when you buy one. It's easy to use and easy to give. TomTom. Go confidently.
Hi, my name's Bill, and I'm totally hooked on mobile banking. You see, with Wachovia and AT&T's newest feature, mobile banking is easy. Too easy. I mean, I'll be putting my phone on vibrate before a movie, and before I know it, I'm transferring funds, checking account balances, or even paying the bills. Seriously, who pays a bill during the previews?
Wachovia has taken mobile banking to a new level. To learn more, go to wachovia.com/mobile banking. Are you with Wachovia?
Wachovia Bank N.A. and Wachovia Bank of Delaware N.A. are members FDIC.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Ready or not, here come the holidays.
I'm almost ready.
Could feel the confidence in that statement, couldn't you? Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. It's our last live broadcast of 2007.
Do you see what I see? Way up in the sky.
And on our program today, we're honored to have a number of very fine journalists. Robert Parry will be joining us in just a moment. Later this hour, Andrew Revkin, the environment reporter at the New York Times, will join us. He was there in Bali, Indonesia at the climate conference. We'll also get his comment on the energy bill and the Bush administration's EPA backdoor. With special favors from Dick Cheney for Detroit right at Christmas time, what could be finer? And a husband-wife team of journalists, Douglas France and Catherine Collins, will join us next hour. They have authored a book about A.Q. Khan, the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapon. It's called The Nuclear Jihadist. Fascinating story. And human rights activist and attorney Asla Bali will join us in our second hour as well to talk about Iran and how things are shaping up following the contradictory national intelligence estimate about their intentions for a nuclear weapon. And our third and final hour, we talk election protection. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with us as usual. Our special guest, Carolyn Cernich. She is the Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County. That's Eureka, Arcata, and the environs, listening to KGOE 1480. Also, Brad's got some big stories breaking this week, including his exclusive interview with Ohio's Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, and lots, lots more. So that's straight ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show today. I hope you can stay with us as much as possible in between your very important errands and duties. And Robert Parry joins me now. He's at ConsortiumNews.com, where he is the editor. And, of course, he worked for AP and Frontline and Newsweek, helped break the Iran-Contra story of the 1980s. And together with two of his sons, his latest book is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush, part of a series of books about the Bush family. And this one is fascinating as well. And I do want to mention that Consortium News is on a fundraising drive right now. They're about halfway there. So if you use the site, and my buddy Russ in Hawaii has told me that he's a recent convert to Consortium News. And so if you have a chance to offer a little cash to help them continue the great journalism they're doing there, I would be much obliged. Bob, welcome to our program. Happy holidays.
Well,
Same to you, Peter.
And I just wanted to start off on a bit of a somber note, because I mentioned that we have four great journalists, starting with you, on our program today. And I noted last week that more than 60 journalists worldwide lost their lives as they worked to bring us information in 2007 alone. And I think it's important to note their contributions and the efforts that the individuals make that are often watered down or filtered by their corporate owners. But the folks who go out there and break the news, investigate the news, and dig for it, I think deserve a great deal of gratitude from all of us.
No, I think that's definitely true. It can be a very dangerous world out there for journalists. One of the problems also when you get to more politicized reporting or journalism back in the United States is that it puts American journalists who are out on the front lines trying to do their jobs right, trying to get the information, in greater danger. It's one of the reasons why it's very important for the American news organizations to really live up to their professional responsibilities to show objectivity and fairness to everybody,
mm-hmm.
And not just play it the American way, which is how it often ends up. That really puts journalists in great danger.
Yeah, and you posted a commentary at Consortium News this week following on an interview that John Conyers did with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now, where Conyers said that, you know, one of the reasons why Democrats are afraid to pursue impeachment is the hostility of the American news media. And I don't want to tie that to individual reporters, because I think, again, reporters do their jobs. They dig for news wherever they can find it, often, you know, without great bias or agendas. And it's the people who own the presses and the television cameras and the transmitters who control the final product.
That was a pretty remarkable comment from Conyers. He was responding to comments that Ray McGovern had made on Amy Goodman's show. And essentially, Ray has been an advocate for holding President Bush and Vice President Cheney accountable and using the impeachment clauses in the Constitution to do so, at least to get the hearings going, at least to dig out the information. But Conyers said that he would not do that. And one of the reasons he cited was what he anticipated would be the hostility of of so much of the American news media. And by that, he was talking about the corporate news media, but he could have also been including the very powerful right-wing news media that exists. And there's no question that any effort like this would be treated with disdain by much of that Washington press corps. The Washington Post, most interestingly, which was, of course, one of the lead forces in pursuing Watergate some 30-some years plus ago,
mm-hmm.
It has now been one of the leading forces in defending and protecting Bush from serious criticism for his abuses and actions. They've, the editorial page in particular has defended him on his involvement with exposing Valerie Plame's identity, the CIA officer.
Yeah.
And they've been protecting him on his deceptions about Iraq for years and years. So what you've seen is a really dangerous and serious change in the whole nature of the National Press Corps in the United States.
Well, and what you just mentioned about the Washington Post, it seems like we need some guarantee that the editorial writers have actually read the news columns of their own damn newspaper.
That's true. There are times that the reporters will do a pretty good job on a story, but their senior editors will want to spin it a different way. And their editorial page editors have really bought into the neocon agenda. So you've had the editorial page editor, Fred Hyatt, running really vitriolic editorials against Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame's husband. He ran a very nasty editorial against Al Gore after Al Gore won the Nobel Peace Prize. There's been this remarkable tendency on the part of that newspaper to really mock people who don't sort of toe the line of the sort of Washington establishment. And certainly the Washington establishment has bought in very much to the neocon agenda.
And Bob, I want to push back a little bit on the argument of Conyers, and you don't have to defend him. You can argue with me or agree with me. I don't care. But I do understand his point, and I don't dismiss it.
At the same time, this is part of a long string of excuses from the Democrats as to why they're not using their prerogatives and the constitutional power that they have. And I agree that the corporate media in this country tends to attack those who stand for the Constitution, especially in confronting this administration for its lawbreaking and its unconstitutional behavior. And, you know, if the media is the problem, then I'd like to hear Conyers with a 10-point program to require corporate media to subscribe to some sort of a journalistic standard of ethics or some other way of addressing those issues. But, you know, we've heard Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida and others, some who've come on this program, give us a string of reasons of, oh, we can't, we shouldn't, it's not wise, it might backfire. And I'm frankly not persuaded, because I believe that the best politics is consistency with the Constitution and holding accountable those of any party who have violated the constitutional oaths they've taken and the statutes that they are required to observe. And so while I think Conyers makes an interesting point, bottom line is I don't buy it that impeachment should be avoided because it might get messy or it might backfire.
Well, I certainly agree with you. That should not be any kind of decisive factor. If you've read some of the pieces I've done at ConsortiumNews.com recently, I did a piece on the one-year anniversary of the Democratic victory in November, November 7th, talking about the Democrats' year of living fecklessly. And not only have they failed to not achieve the kinds of policy changes on Iraq and elsewhere that some people might have hoped for, but they've failed to really investigate. They failed to bring the information out to the American people in a meaningful, consistent way. And obviously impeachment hearings, even if they didn't achieve impeachment, would serve that end of showing the American people why this has been such a dangerous administration. I don't accept any of the Democrats when they offer me those kinds of excuses. I do think it's a fair point that there is a need to work on and build an honest news media, both from those of us within it and people who are more external, who might want to support these kinds of activities. People with money on the liberal side, maybe they should get in the game, like Rupert Murdoch did on the right, and start getting into a point where there is much more balance in the U.S. news system. That is important, but it's certainly not an excuse for Conyers and others not to do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are some interesting examples. For example, Dan Abrams at MSNBC has recently started a series called Bush League Justice. He focused on the Siegelman case that Larissa Alexandrovna at Raw Story and Scott Horton at Harper's have been really digging into. And now I just got an email minutes ago that 60 Minutes is going to do a piece. We don't know how hard-hitting it will be, but they're at least going to cover the Siegelman affair on 60 Minutes in January. So it's not a total lockdown or blackout, but on some of the most critical constitutional issues, we do see the corporate media nibble around the edges, do a kind of personality journalism, and say, well, that's enough.
Well, the way it's supposed to work in a functioning democratic system would be for the opposition party, the Democrats, to dig up some information, get that into the press. The press then picks up on it, follows on it, and then it goes back and forth. And out of that comes the truth, comes an honest history, an honest accounting. People can be held accountable. Without that kind of dynamic, if one of the parties, or in this case sometimes both parties, don't do their job, the American people are left in the dark. But the Democrats have to do their job. It's not simply that the press can go out and do things, even if the press had an intention to.
Mm-hmm.
The press has limited ability and powers to get information. The Democrats would have to fight with subpoenas and other means to dig out and pry loose information that then they should make every effort they can to get into the public domain. Without that dynamic, you just don't get any kind of honest story, an honest accounting, an honest history.
We're talking with Robert Perry. Bob Perry will stay with us, and we continue in just a moment. Visit his website at consortiumnews.com to get the stories we're talking about. And do order the book Neck Deep. You can help support the journalistic work there at consortiumnews.com. More in a moment. You can join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman, and you're listening to Monterey Bay's Progressive Voice, KRXA 540. Think for yourself!
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey is family-owned for more than 40 years. That's why when you walk in, you're treated so well. They know what they're doing. Excellent service and great product. They have the best in high-end liquor and an excellent selection of the finest wines. It's the real deal. At Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, you can call ahead and your order will be waiting for you. They treat you like family. Open every day 9 to 9 at 19 Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits ask you to please drink responsibly.
I'm Sheila Gale. Join me every Saturday afternoon from 4 to 5 as we talk about effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges. Depression, death of a loved one, addictions, illness, fear. There's nothing we won't talk about. My guests include life coaches, best-selling authors, and you. Call in, and together we'll find ways to live with less stress and more joy and peace. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers. Serving Monterey County since 1968. Sun Street Centers.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, this is J.R. Medina, and I want to thank KRXA and its listeners for supporting my store, PG Liquors. My son-in-law, Chad, and I truly appreciate the wonderful positive response that we have received to our advertising campaign on this station. We urge other business people in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties who want to increase their business at a reasonable cost to call KRXA's sales manager, Larry Rathall, at 394-5792. KRXA provides the best advertising value that I have found for businesses like mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Viva Carlos. Carlos Santana. Happy holidays from the Peter B. Collins Show. 24 minutes past the hour as we continue with journalist Robert Parry from ConsortiumNews.com. And you may not have heard this, and it didn't come from Bill O'Reilly, but this year the Central Front in the War on Christmas is in Iowa, where the January 3rd caucuses are leading to a kind of mudslinging for Jesus, and it's just a wonderful sight to behold, Bob. You report Mike Huckabee emphasizing the Christ in Christmas. He told a crowd in Dyke, Iowa, "What's wrong with our country? What is wrong with our culture is that you can't say the name Jesus Christ without people going completely berserk." And you cite an item that you wrote a couple of years back during the big combat of the war on Christmas. You said, "You have to hand it to political operatives who can turn the Christmas celebration of Jesus' birth into a nasty wedge issue, transforming a traditional message of love, peace, and tolerance into one of anger, conflict, and resentment." And I would just add, scoring political points.
No, it's amazing. And this goes again to the power that the right-wing news media has built for itself with this, the massive investment we've seen there, that up can be made down. The idea that the United States doesn't celebrate Christmas adequately is one of the most ludicrous arguments that could ever be presented. We go through over a month or so of Christmas celebration from Thanksgiving on to December 25th and even beyond. Towns and cities are bedecked with Christian symbols and Christmas symbols, but somehow because there are anecdotes of cases where because there have been efforts to include other people and not exclude Jews or Muslims or atheists or people that aren't of a religious belief by saying Happy Holidays, that's become kind of this huge anger point for the right. And even though Huckabee is not using it in quite the vicious way it was used a couple of years ago, he is exploiting it.
Oh, yeah.
There is this feeling on the Christian right that they are the victims. And so when Huckabee plays to that, and he says it's, you know, we can't say Merry Christmas, and he gets these standing ovations from these crowds, what he's really picking up on is this political issue that was created essentially out of whole cloth.
Well, he wants to be president. He wants to be president of all the Christians, Bob.
Well, I guess that's right. I mean, he certainly. But it's such an odd argument that in the United States, Christmas is not observed more seriously it's extraordinary. I mean, Christmas is the only religious holiday that is a federal holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been this effort to take these little anecdotes, which are essentially done to provide some sense of fairness to people who aren't Christians, and make this something that Christians have gotten angry about. It's remarkable how that works. We saw it also with the political correctness argument that was put in play a decade or so ago, where white men, young white men who like to use curse words against racial minorities were being essentially told not to, and that became something, an infringement on their rights. So this idea of taking people who are very powerful, effectively the most privileged groups in the United States, and trying to make them feel like victims is a very dangerous concept.
Yeah.
We've seen this happen elsewhere in the world, and it usually ends up very badly.
And, Bob, let me turn to one other item that I read at Consortium News this week regarding the indirect attacks from the Clinton campaign, denied, of course, on Barack Obama, whispering about his drug use and imagining that Republicans would say it much more loudly. And you made a point that the Clintons should be concerned about some of the dirt that Secret Service agents might have on them from the 8 years in the White House, and it raised the question, gosh, was Monica the only one?
No, really. The point we're making is that they're, for the last 7 years, since the Clintons left the White House, they have been under Secret Service protection,
mm-hmm.
which means that the Department of Homeland Security regularly keeps track of where they go and whom they're with. And I was having dinner with a Clinton intimate the other day, and he was raising this as a possibility. I'd mentioned this in a previous article, mm-hmm. and he was saying it's indeed true, that there's great alarm because if the Secret Service, if Mike Chertoff's people over at Homeland Security know...
Bob, I got to stop there. People can read all about it at consortiumnews.com. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. Bye, Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by the new deep-heating Shiatsu massaging back cushion from Home Medics. I'm Charles Osgood. Remember the acclaimed documentary film 9/11? It was made by Jules Naudet and his brother Gédéon, French filmmakers who were doing a film about the New York City Fire Department who were caught in the collapse of the World Trade Center. They both survived, but facing death, thought they had lost one another. And this harrowing experience was the first step in a journey that would take them around the world searching for answers to the meaning of life. They spoke with the most influential spiritual leaders in the world.
We got answers, maybe not always the one we were looking for, but they were deep enough to make us think, to make us wonder.
The result is a stunning two-hour broadcast event, In God's Name, that will be on CBS television this Sunday night. Some excerpts after this for the new Home Medics Therapist Select Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion. With the new deep-heating massage mechanism that travels up and down your back and feels even more like the hands of a skilled shiatsu therapist, delivering penetrating relief from tension, muscle pain, and fatigue. What a gift to be able to give someone the stress-melting benefit of a shiatsu massage on demand without the expense of visiting a massage therapist or owning one of those big pricey chairs. This works with any chair, anytime, all year long. The new Home Medic Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion is truly state-of-the-art. So good, the SBM has earned the Good Housekeeping Seal. I love mine. I know you'll love yours, too. The new deep-heating Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion. Check it out online at homemedics.com. Available at retailers everywhere. The Naudet brothers met the Dalai Lama, the Hindu spiritual leader, Amma.
People cannot live without belief. Everything is belief.
They met with Pope Benedict.
In every human heart, despite all the problems that exist, is a thirst for God.
Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, told him that what they had experienced at the World Trade Center was a great lesson.
We don't understand how quickly it could all fall away. I don't think we have enough sense of urgency about reconciliation. And we need some sharp and clear voices to say, wake up. Wake up to how very quickly this could disappear.
Jules Naudet.
After spending all this time with these different cultures and different faiths, I think what we get out of it was that we have so much more that unites us than divides us. And I think that gives my brother and I a tremendous sense of hope.
His brother, Gédéon.
At the end of this journey, I realize that the search for truth is in itself a religious act.
In God's Name will be on CBS this Sunday night at 9 Eastern and Pacific times. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Pacific Grove's Joe Rombi has turned his attention to pizza. Central Coast residents and visitors can now enjoy the finest pizza this side of Italy. Whether you crave the elegant simplicity of a pizza margherita or one of Joe Rombi's signature creations, you'll fall in love with pizza all over again at Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa Pizzeria, next to Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina on 17th Street in Pacific Grove. Click on joerombi.com or call 831-373-0129. That's 373-0129.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We're going to get a report on the Bali Climate Conference right now.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and greets me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like hairspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorofluorocarbon strip away ozone. We can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and it now deduced. The vampires of progress have come home to rule.
Oh, indeed they have. That's our pal Dr. Elmo. Hasn't been here since, gosh, yesterday. And for most of our listeners on the Peter B. Collins Network on Christmas Eve, you can hear our Hour with Dr. Elmo and the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer song. That'll be playing back 5 p.m. Pacific time, the third hour of the PBC show. And in Portland, you'll have to log on to peterbcollins.com and either catch the podcast or the live stream. But that makes it accessible to just about everybody within the sound of my voice. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, and my personal email is humblehost@peterbcollins.com. You're invited to reach out whenever the urge strikes you. In a moment, we'll be joined by Andrew C. Revkin. He is the environment reporter for the New York Times and creator of the .earth blog at the newspaper. And he's also the author of a fabulous new book, which is called The North Pole Was Here. And it's a fascinating look at the top of the world and the factors that contribute to the polar ice cap melt and other things that are connected to global warming. And it's written not in a dumbed-down way, but in a very accessible way with a lot of color charts and graphs here. And it's the book that taught me that the North Pole is not an actual specific geographical location. It floats around there at the top of the planet. So I recommend it to you, and it's not too late for you to check it out as a holiday gift for somebody on your list who is interested in science or might be somebody who wants to know more about the climate change issues and also just the fascinating world at the North Pole. So I recommend that to you, and you can probably find that online or at your local independent bookstore. It's called The North Pole Was Here, from Andrew C. Revkin. And I just heard the phone ring. He's dialed in right now, so let's check in with Andy Revkin right now. Hello, Andy.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome back to our program today. How's it going?
Pretty good. A hectic day, but there you go.
Well, thanks for making time to join us. I appreciate that. And first up, I wanted to get your comments on the climate change conference in Bali. And in our second segment, I wanted to get your reaction to the energy bill and the move by the EPA on Thursday that has angered Barbara Boxer and many of us here in California. But first to Bali. I had a chance to visit that island about 20 years ago. It's a fascinating place, and I hope you got a chance to tour around a little bit while you're on duty there.
Well, I actually covered it from long distance. I was there around the clock, but by phone, email, and text message, and a colleague was there on the ground.
Oh, okay. I see.
And I won't say that I did it mainly to save greenhouse gases, although I probably avoided about 6 tons of CO2 by not flying. But, you know, it also saved the paper money. And mm-hmm. If you've watched the New York Times stock price lately, you know that money matters.
Yeah. To
every media company these days. Mm-hmm. But I was there also. I was there in 1979 for several weeks, and some part of me was afraid to go back because I've heard about how much development has taken place since then.
Well, that's
anyway, I covered it long distance.
Yeah, that's not something I know about because it's been 20 years for me, but I really enjoyed my visit and I would like to go back sometime. So as we look at this now and with the comments from President Bush in his news conference on Thursday, he said, I think, four different times that he takes the issue very seriously. And the third time was when I started to say, well, you must not really mean that. And yet the U.S. did make some concessions toward the end of the conference. Do you find those to be meaningful, or was it just window dressing to avoid a total rout and more booze as we exited the building?
Well, that last-minute holdup was over a fairly minor detail. It was about, the administration wouldn't say it's minor, but it was about how carefully we would be held to account for money that came from rich countries to poor countries to help them as they try to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions.
So you mean the distribution of cap and trade funds? Is that what it boils down to?
Not necessarily cap and trade, just straight assistance. Under the original treaty that everyone has signed and agrees to back from 1992, rich countries have agreed to help poor countries both adapt to the changes in climate and adopt different technologies so that they don't repeat our kind of pollution pattern. But that was still sort of a minor detail. On the big things, the administration got everything it wanted, which was essentially pure, absolute flexibility, no agreement that this agreement that's going to be negotiated for the next 2 years will have any binding limits on gases and ahead of time. And so that's really, that was the main show. And on that front, the administration basically got what it wanted.
But how does that contribute to consensus building and a worldwide effort to reduce our emissions?
Well, you know, the Bush team would say that's the only way to get a worldwide effort, because so many countries outside of the few who signed on to Kyoto, who actually abide by Kyoto's targets, the only way to get China and India to agree to anything right now is to make sure it doesn't have any mandatory aspects. China and India have flatly said they're happy to see industrialized, wealthy nations take on limits, but they're not willing to discuss any. So the administration feels, you know, and it's a point of view, it's not necessarily wrong, that the best steps forward from here, especially because the brunt of emissions in the next few decades are going to come from those fast-growing poor countries.
But don't we have a chicken and egg situation here, Andy, where China is basically saying, as long as the U.S. is going to play fast and loose, we're not going to lock into any hard commitments to reduce our output?
Absolutely. It's Alphonse and Gaston, the old comedy act. Oh, no, sir, you go first.
Yeah.
And China has a pretty strong case to make about, you know, even though we're essentially tied with them right now on total emissions of greenhouse gases, we spent 100 years building our multi-trillion dollar economy and wealth on burning fossil fuels. And they're saying, hey, you know, it's our turn. And we, in fact, we quoted a piece I did the other day on the Sunday Times that we can review. We quoted an Indian official who said, "It's what we would like to see is the countries that can afford to reduce emissions do so." And that's basically the rich country.
Andrew Revkin is our guest, the New York Times environment writer. And Andy, you just referenced your piece. It was in the Sunday, December 16th, Week in Review section, and I am holding it up to the microphone right now, because your piece was accompanied by a fascinating graphic that showed the exponential growth of our carbon output worldwide since the Industrial Revolution. And it, in simple terms, you show the chart essentially as time marches on, fanning out into larger and larger total amounts of emission until we hit, in 2004, 7.9 billion metric tons of carbon and other related pollutants. And take it from there about what the projections are going forward and how they compare to the past.
Well, basically, what that chart shows is in the next 30 years, the world will emit as much greenhouse gases as we emitted through the 20th century, over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing, essentially, you're seeing the ballooning of this wave of prosperity that started in the West mainly, and it's now expanding to the biggest countries by population around the world. And right now, many of them use one-fifth or one-tenth as much energy per person as we do, or actually less. India, I think, is 20 times less than the United States, the average person. And they're looking around, and parts of India, parts of China already are seeing the comforts of air conditioning and having a car. You know, India is now selling these $3,000 Tata cars, and the middle class is loving it. You know, why in the world should they not, again, have the right in theory to expand and prosper the way we all did? So what all of this entails, as I've written as well, is essentially some kind of leapfrogging would have to happen. The industrializing countries of today somehow have to avoid the polluting pattern that our industrialization had as a prerequisite before we... Basically, the old pattern of growing as a country was you extracted resources, you grew, you industrialized, you polluted, and then when you were wealthy and had the wherewithal, you started to clean things up. And what we're telling China and India is they have to do all of those things at once. And that, as I said in that story, many economists say, has to involve essentially us helping them. We have to basically pay them in some way or other to if they're going to do that.
Well, and that brings me to a thought that I'd like your reaction to, Andy, and I realize your beat is science and the environment and maybe not trade, but it strikes me that, you know, I'm not a big fan of NAFTA and the WTO and the whole globalization scheme for trade and business, because I think it leaves us at a disadvantage domestically, and it does become the proverbial race to the bottom, where we end up competing with people whose living standards and educational standards and environmental standards are much below ours. That said, it strikes me that we kind of missed the boat in negotiating the very deals I just mentioned, because there isn't a mechanism in there to incentivize, for example, China to say, look, you know, we bring in almost $1 trillion of your products every year. And, you know, we'll give you a break on tariffs or taxes or pricing or what have you in exchange for movement on your emissions. And if we tie the cost of selling exports to the United States to some standard of environmentalism and reduction in emissions, could we create a workable scheme there, in your view?
Well, that's one possibility. In fact, there was a piece in the Sunday Business section by Judith Chevalier, a Yale economist, proposing just that kind of scheme. There, too, though, if it's going to impose a cost on those countries, they're still going to say, well, the differential there should be paid by the countries that have spent 100 years creating the greenhouse problem that we already have. So you still end up in sort of a chicken and egg bind. And by the way, that's what leads a bunch of people back to the other prospect, which is that if everyone just got very aggressive about trying to find cheaper, better, non-polluting ways to generate a lot of energy, then this whole transition to a decarbonized economy, including these big, rich manufacturing, big poor manufacturing countries, would be, you know, accelerated.
Mm-hmm. Have you read the Nordhaus Schellenberger book? Gosh, I talked to him yesterday, and I'm blocking on the title.
Breakthrough.
Breakthrough. Thank you.
Yeah, I wrote about it about a month ago.
Okay. What do you think of their ideas? Because they're trying to move the environmentalists away from this kind of confrontation and limiting of growth. And they talk, I would call them kind of free market progressives, who believe that the ultimate solutions lie in engagement and growth and development, as opposed to various schemes that restrict the same.
Yeah, well, as I wrote, I mean, they've kind of picked up on some themes that we've been writing about for years now in the Times, which again gets to this. The other thing they stress is the need for a research quest, a big boost in investment, public and private, but a lot of it public money, or government money, mm-hmm. in trying to advance technologies so that we, again, can make the transition more cheaply. If you don't lower the cost of energy, you're not going to get there in mm-hmm. these countries.
Well, and their central thought in the book is that we miss the point when we think of environmentalism as simply a response to the degradation of nature, and that we have to look at the economic causes, and they focus a lot on Brazil, and basically show that because it's a nation with severe economic problems, that they continue to plunder their rainforests. And if we address the underlying economic security question, that they would be more willing to be you know, better stewards of their own natural resources.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And again, though, part of that comes, too, from just economic development. I, in fact, they cite my book, The Burning Season, about the Amazon, which I wrote way back in 1990, which looked at the economics of the rainforest and the rubber tappers who were trying to prevent deforestation, the murder of Chico Mendes.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line there was there's no governance. And where you have no governance, you have no environmental protection. And that's the big problem in the Amazon. And governance only comes, again, with sort of the kind of a kind of development that only really comes when, well, I don't know. There's various ways to get it. One way is to have Brazil be more kind of connected with the outside world and have mm-hmm. the Amazon be part of that. Now, but Brazil has resisted that for a long time, too.
Yeah.
They don't want other people measuring the Amazon, for example.
Yeah. complex issues, I understand. We're going to take a break and return with Andrew Revkin from the New York Times. We'll go to the phones in the next segment, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Want to get his comment, too, on the energy bill with the new mileage standards and the EPA's decision to eviscerate the efforts of 17 states to regulate auto emissions. Very interesting story. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues with New York Times environment reporter Andrew C. Revkin. As we mentioned, his latest book is a great gift for the holidays. It's called The North Pole Was Here, and I learned a lot from it. You can, too, about the North Pole and about our climate. And, Andy, I hope that sells at least 10 extra copies. In the bio you sent, you don't mention your band. You still gigging?
Actually, I'm in a room right now with one of my bandmates. we're a little bit dormant lately, but Uncle Wade is, we're always around a little bit. It's a great relief for me to do music on the side.
Yeah, okay. Any public performances you want to brag about, or is it?
Well, I'm going to be playing with Dar Williams in February, solo.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a big fan of hers, so that's kind of fun.
All right, good. At a venue that people might find, or is it?
Ursinus College in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. That's not on my well-traveled list. Let's take a phone call. Dave is on the line from Eureka with a comment. Hello, Dave. You're on with Andy Revkin.
Hey, Peter and Andy. I think it's significant that right-wing talk radio is still totally in denial that there is any evidence to support such a thing as global warming. They're never honest about anything else. I don't know why I should expect more from them on this, but they have their purpose. I'm sure they're the voice for big money corporate America who's, you know, be expected to pay something to get this cleaned up.
And well, Andy, what is the status of the deniers? And
Well, I just blogged on this today on .earth, my NY Times blog.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be people on the fringe of any argument in science. And Senator Inhofe just released yesterday a list of 400 scientists who are concerned that the Al Gore version of global warming is an overstatement. And some of them go way beyond that, feel that there's no proof of global warming at all. So there, you know, that's always going to be out there, but what gets missed when we just look at the polls of the debate, you know, that there's someone saying it's a catastrophe, someone saying it's a hoax, is that all kind of distracts from the reality, which is there's a huge amount that's known very confidently. We're heading to a significantly warmer world. These trends will probably last for centuries, mainly because the main greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide, lasts for centuries in the atmosphere. So the middle gets missed in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Andy, I want to turn to the energy bill and the action by the EPA this week, because here in California, we're pretty worked up about it. The background is that the energy bill does require an increase in the CAFE standards. That's the auto mileage requirements of cars made in the United States. And it does move up reasonably over the next 15 years or so. And Bush's EPA executive, Stephen Johnson, then turned around, almost a day later, and said, well, since the energy bill has been passed, we don't need to grant a waiver to California and 16 other states that represent more than half of the automobile emissions in the entire United States. We don't have to give them a waiver so that they can regulate auto emissions on their own. And they're using the excuse that we don't want a patchwork of regulation.
Right.
But your colleagues, John Broder and Michaeline, I guess it is, Maynard, in Friday's New York Times, report that this was predictable because, after all, Dick Cheney had meetings with auto executives back at Halloween and in November. And he, according to these reports, made it pretty clear that he was sympathetic to Detroit's concerns. And so this is kind of a bait-and-switch game, in my view. What's yours?
Well, it comes down to a fundamental tension between the industry clearly wants one standard. And the history of environmental regulation in this country has been that things are pushed forward by the states and then become federal law, partially because of the convenience and efficiency that comes with one standard. So there's a lot of, you know, logic there. Although on pollution, California, as anyone out there knows, you know, has always had the right to set a stronger standard. In this case, the administration argues that automobile efficiency is not really a pollution thing. It's different. And they feel that they just have a fundamentally different view of that, and obviously it's an industry-friendly view, and you can kind of take that for what it's worth.
But the administration wants us to believe that these are equivalent, Andy, and there's a big difference, because regulating mileage standards does not necessarily affect emissions. Regulating emissions will probably impact mileage standards.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's all been laid out pretty clearly. The bottom line is there's some things the president can do that sort of... You know, he clearly has a policy. This reminds me of John Marburger, the president's science advisor, a few years ago when I interviewed him about the politicization of science. He said, look, you know, this administration has a view on these things, and it has the right to express them. They were elected, you know, to pursue a mandate of, you know, whether or not everyone agrees. And that's kind of their stance. And then, you know, sort of their point of view is the states can take us to court. And it's really... You know,
and again,
exasperated by it.
You know, Johnson overruled all of his top people, some of whom are leaking like a sprinkler hose.
Right.
So this is just another one of those dust-ups. But
well, I wrote for years about what happened with climate science the same way, where, you know, there was rewriting done by the White House that was mm-hmm. sort of my way or the highway kind of editing.
Right. Very interesting. Well, Andy, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate your commentary. Again, I want people to pick up your latest book, The North Pole Was Here. I found it very interesting, and I learned a few things from it. So thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in the new year.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, and have a good weekend.
Yep, same to you. Andrew C. Revkin from the New York Times. Coming up next, we're going to talk about A.Q. Khan, the father of Pakistan's nuclear bomb,
and a major proliferator. Journalists Douglas France and Catherine Collins, they're married, will join us next to talk about their new book, The Nuclear Jihadist. You can get podcasts of this program and links to our live daily stream at www.peterbcollins.com. This program is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is on duty today taking your phone calls, and our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Grieving parents sue over a liver transplant approved too late.
All I know, I don't have a daughter anymore, 17-year-old daughter anymore.
Asking the courts to investigate the destruction of CIA tapes.
The Justice Department is not in a great position to say that it should be trusted in this matter.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. Grigor Sarkisian's daughter, Nataline, died in Los Angeles late yesterday, a leukemia victim who was waiting for a liver transplant.
We were hoping so she can be with us in Christmas. I don't have any more Christmas.
Nataline's death came just hours after Cigna Healthcare decided to pay for the operation under intense public pressure. CBS News correspondent Manuel Gallegos reports.
Teenagers, the family, nurses, dozens and dozens of people protested outside of Cigna's office, and they kind of stormed the office very vocally. And in a very unusual about-face, Cigna agreed to approve the liver transplant.
Now, because approval came too late, the Sarkisian family plans to sue, and their attorney, Mark Garriga, says Cigna Healthcare should face criminal charges.
They single-handedly decided that they wanted to have her die and wait so that they would not have to take the aftercare coverage and pay for that.
Cigna says its deepest sympathies are with Nataline's family. Now this.
Get in the zone. AutoZone. Looking for the perfect gift for the do-it-yourselfer on your list? Then get to AutoZone. Right now at AutoZone, get the Great Neck 18-volt rechargeable cordless power drill for the unheard-of low price of just $12.99. You heard right, just $12.99. And while you're at AutoZone, don't forget to pick up some AutoZone gift cards. Start early and shop AutoZone for all your holiday gifts. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Hey, it's Ty Pennington. This holiday, I'm all about granting wishes. So time's running out, but you want to come out of the holidays looking golden? How about fine jewelry? The entire stock is 40 to 60% off at the Sears Last Minute Wish Sale. And remember, when you order gifts at Sears.com and pick up in store, they'll be ready in 5 minutes guaranteed. So find something special they'll take a real shine to at Sears, Friday through Christmas Eve. And don't just give a gift, grant a wish.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/07.
Lawyers for detainees at Guantanamo Bay went before a federal judge in Washington today asking him to investigate the CIA's destruction of interrogation videos. The Justice Department has already opened an investigation, but plaintiff's attorney David Reams says it can't be trusted.
The Justice Department itself may have sanctioned the destruction of these videotapes, and therefore it would be a classic case of the foxes guarding the hen house.
CBS News correspondent Dan Revie followed the hearing.
The federal judge, Henry Kennedy, was businesslike, not angry in any way. He seems reluctant to launch his own investigation into how and why the CIA destroyed interrogation videotapes. Lawyers for the Bush administration argued that the tapes did not concern the Guantanamo detainees who have filed a lawsuit. That's the case Judge Kennedy is presiding over. Kennedy said he'll take all this under advisement. He issued no ruling.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice took a shot at a Republican presidential hopeful today. She was asked at a news conference about Mike Huckabee's charge that the Bush administration's foreign policy has been governed by a bunker mentality.
The idea that somehow this is a go-it-alone policy is just simply ludicrous.
They're talking about a Santa Claus rally on Wall Street. The Dow jumped 205 points to finish the final full trading week of the year at 13,450. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus says there were several factors, but
the news that really put us over the top was the consumer spending. Consumers continue to be resilient despite higher oil prices and a slumping housing market. Consumers are hanging in there, and there's a belief now that we might be able to dodge a recession in 2008.
People in the financial industry will find their stockings stuffed on Christmas morning. Despite huge losses in subprime mortgages, the four top investment banks will distribute nearly $30 billion in bonus money.
Everything that they do is measured in dollars. And the more money that they make, the more money trickles down to the individual employee.
Bill Coleman is chief compensation officer at Salary.com. Some top executives will forego their bonuses. The Christmas getaway is on. CBS News correspondent Harry Srinivasan is covering air travel.
There are ground delays in Boston, LaGuardia, JFK, Newark, New Jersey, Philadelphia, basically up and down the eastern seaboard there. Originally, it was snow overnight in Boston that led to a lot of cancellations this morning. And throughout the day, it was bad weather throughout New York and Philadelphia.
More trouble on the way. A new snowstorm moving out of the southern Rockies right now. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Holidays getting closer. It's all right. There's a gift you'll find is perfect every time. Let's give Outback tonight.
Let go of your shopping worries with Outback Holiday Gift Cards. Give everyone on your list a taste of the bold, fresh flavors of Outback. Drop by tonight and leave your worries behind.
Let's give Outback tonight.
Get gift cards at any Outback or Outback.com.
Hey, it's Ty Pennington. This holiday, I'm all about granting wishes. So time's running out, but you want to come out of the holidays looking golden? How about fine jewelry? The entire stock is 40 to 60% off at the Sears Last Minute Wish Sale. And remember, when you order gifts at Sears.com and pick up in store, they'll be ready in 5 minutes guaranteed. So find something special that'll take a real shine to at Sears, Friday through Christmas Eve. And don't just give a gift, grant a wish.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/07.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Without leaving the comfort of your car or that chair you're curled up in, this hour we explore Pakistan and Iran. Later in the hour, Asla Bali will join us. She's a human rights activist and an attorney, and she's going to fill us in on her views on the about-face on intelligence related to Iran's desire to develop a nuclear weapon. And as we continue with great journalists, as I mentioned, Robert Perry, Andrew Revkin from the New York Times, and joining us now, Douglas France and Catherine Collins. Their new book is called The Nuclear Jihadist. That's a
song about nukes from Midnight Oil, and I just learned last week that Peter Garrett, the skinhead 6'6" lead singer of Midnight Oil, is now a major environmental advisor to the new Prime Minister of Australia. I think his name is Kevin Rudd, and it was Peter Garrett who was front and center on announcing, or at least facilitating, that Australia would sign the Kyoto Accords shortly after the new Prime Minister took office. As we mentioned, two great journalists join us. They happen to be married. Douglas France, a senior writer at Portfolio Magazine, former managing editor of the LA Times, where he was also an investigative reporter and a foreign correspondent based in Istanbul, Turkey. He's also worked for the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune, a two-time Pulitzer Prize finalist. And Catherine Collins has been a reporter for the Chicago Tribune and also written for the LA Times and the New York Times, and the two of them have authored several books together. The newest is called The Nuclear Jihadist, with a subtitle that does creep beyond our limits: The True Story of the Man Who Sold the World's Most Dangerous Secrets and How We Could Have Stopped Him. Douglas France, Catherine Collins, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I just want to tip you off that if you creep up the charts on the bestseller list, I can claim one. I took your book to lunch with me today, and when I stopped off at Radio Shack to buy a battery, the guy who sold it to me looked at the book and said, "I got to get a copy of that."
Great.
We'd like to hear that. Thank you.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and I have to say that your book is, forgive me if you don't like to hear about other authors on the same topic, but Adrian Levy and Catherine Scott Clark wrote a fabulous book called Deception, which details some of the same issues. It's not quite as much of a profile of A.Q. Khan, but I think the two together give us important new information that Americans either have just not accessed or not, had access to over the last 25 years. But, Catherine, if I could start with you, there is a long history of U.S. complicity, or at least knowledge of the intention of Pakistan to develop a nuclear weapon. And while we may not have supplied them with plans, materials, and enriched uranium, we certainly knew about it and tolerated it for a long, long time.
That's exactly right. It was no secret. Prime Minister Zulfikar Ali Bhutto announced in the late 1960s, when he was still just the energy minister, that he thought that Pakistan ought to have a nuclear arsenal, although he didn't get to act on it until he became prime minister in the early 70s. But it was A.Q. Khan, who was a Pakistani, had gone to Europe in order to further his education and began working at a lab in the Netherlands. It was actually a consortium, a joint effort by the British, the Germans, and the Dutch to develop the latest centrifuge technology. Centrifuges are used to enrich uranium. And it was A.Q. Khan that brought back to Pakistan this technology in 1975 under the very noses of the CIA. At the time, the Dutch security police were very concerned when they became aware that they might have a spy operating in their midst, and they were lobbying in their government to arrest this man. And the economics ministry really didn't want to. They were very anxious about having a very public and embarrassing incident when they were running this program with two other countries. So they went to the CIA and asked for backup, saying, shouldn't we arrest this guy? And they were really shocked to discover that the CIA said, no. Let's just watch to see what he can do. And this is all the way back in 1975.
Yeah. And Douglas France, A.Q. Khan was permitted to become the father of the Pakistani bomb, but he also set up his own private business. And we actually see that with university professors here in this country who have a job in academics, but also maybe develop biotech or other patents and exploit them privately. But it's kind of unusual. I learned from your book that A.Q. Khan became a very wealthy man in the process, owned a lot of real estate, and secretly owned a newspaper in Pakistan.
Yes, we were able, through reporting in Pakistan, I think, to uncover a fair amount of new information about A.Q. Khan, and it sort of fits into the narrative arc of his life, if you will. When he left the Netherlands with the plans that Kathy mentioned, he stole the plans and he stole a shopping list that Pakistan could use to buy the technology and material they needed to build their bomb. He left then as a patriot, and he wanted to help Pakistan build what became known as the Islamic bomb in order to counter the nuclear arsenal that India was developing, India and Pakistan being arch rivals, of course. But as he grew in stature in Pakistan, and as he fulfilled his role there in helping their bomb program, he became a very influential and a very ego-driven man. He did become very wealthy, and so in order to fulfill that wealth, he created what we refer to in the book as a nuclear Walmart. That phrase actually came from the head UN nuclear watchdog, Mohammed El-Baradei.
Mm-hmm.
And Khan turned around and took the technology that he had stolen from the Dutch and used to build Pakistan's bomb, and he sold it first to the Iranians in 1987, then to the North Koreans beginning in early 1994 and continuing for several years. And then in 1997, he started his grandest project of all. He was going to build an off-the-shelf bomb factory for Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Mm-hmm. And here's a quote from your prologue. By the time he was stopped, Khan had done more to destabilize the world's delicate nuclear balance than anyone in history, emerging as the common thread woven through today's most dangerous nuclear threats, from the potential showdown between India and Pakistan to the international standoffs with North Korea and Iran. The sheer scale of what Khan wrought is breathtaking, and so is the apparent ease with which he sold his wares. Khan's organization was a nuclear Walmart, selling weapons blueprints, parts for thousands of centrifuges to manufacture fissile materials for bombs, and the expertise to assemble the works into a bomb kit. The Pakistani scientist and his accomplices shattered the old proliferation model of state-to-state transfers in which one government quietly shared nuclear secrets with an ally. For the first time, an individual demonstrated convincingly that the existing international safeguards and mindset were no longer operative, leading to the grim conclusion that any ruthless or unstable regime, or individual for that matter, with the will and money, could acquire the bomb. You go on. What is nearly as remarkable is that Khan spread this nuclear technology in partial view of successive administrations in Washington and in European capitals. And later in the book, you describe how Congressman Dick Cheney became aware in a detailed manner of Pakistan's development as far back as the late 1970s or early 80s. Is that right, Catherine?
Oh, let me pass that one over to Doug.
Okay.
Yes, you're exactly right. I mean, there was widespread knowledge within the American Congress and within the, as you say, successive administrations of what Pakistan was doing. But there was a formal decision made in 1979 by President Jimmy Carter to turn a blind eye toward Pakistan's nuclear program and toward the central role played in that program by A.Q. Khan. By then, Khan was certainly on the radar big time, both in the European press and in the American press. But in late 1979, the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, and at that time, President Carter had imposed sanctions on Pakistan because of its nuclear program, but he removed those sanctions in order to bring Pakistan into the American fold and allow them to play a major role in funding the Afghan resistance that fought the Soviets in Afghanistan. And so by making that decision, he set up 11 years in which successive American presidents, Reagan and George H.W. Bush and Dick Cheney when he was a congressman and again when he was defense secretary and chief of staff in the Ford administration and then defense secretary in the first Bush administration, all of those junctures, the American government turned a blind eye toward what Pakistan was doing because they found a short-term strategic goal of defeating the Soviets in Afghanistan to be more important.
Was it also a kind of, I'm grasping for words here, but an allowance of permitting a balance of terror to be established between India and Pakistan, thinking that they could have a Cold War that might be less destructive than open warfare?
Wow. I'm not sure that I quite agree with that, Peter. I think it was a decision of convenience and a strategic mistake by the United States because they needed Pakistan so badly, or thought they did, mm-hmm. to defeat the Soviets in Afghanistan. I mean, I really don't think that, that even Dick Cheney is sinister enough to have wanted to create another nuclear power in the world, particularly in an unstable Islamic country, which is right next door to one of the biggest democracies or the biggest democracy in the world. I understand what you're saying and where you're coming from, but I'm not sure I can go quite that far, at least not based on the research that we did for this book over 4 years.
That's Douglas France along with Catherine Collins. They're co-authors of The Nuclear Jihadist. This is a new book that is out in hardcover from 12, what is it? I'm looking
just
at the,
12.
Just 12?
Yes.
From 12. Okay. Probably on the web at 12.com. We're going to take a break and talk about the Musharraf era, his relationship with Aku Khan, and how he punished him and pardoned him in the same breath, and the U.S. stood idly by and just said, oh, okay, that's enough. We'll talk more about the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapon and the related issues of proliferation as we continue. Lines are open toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
And let's take a look at traffic here on KXRA. Happy Friday, everybody. And let's take a look at a problem right now being reported in Salinas, southbound 1 at Russell Road. It's a two-car fender bender. Everything's off to the right shoulder, and it does appear that we do have CHP units on scene there. Also want to talk about a major problem being reported in San Jose, south 284 Stevens Creek Boulevard. Four-car crash blocking the two left lanes. A SIG alert being issued there, and several CHP units on scene, as you might imagine. Meanwhile, take taking a look at eastbound 183. Reports of slow and go traffic between Castroville and Salinas. By the way, northbound and southbound 17 at this point looking excellent. And southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel also looking rather nice as well. Well, support brought to you by Pep Boys. Pep Boys has fantastic gift ideas. Never get lost again with the Garmin Nuvi GPS unit that features turn-by-turn voice guidance. It's an incredible $199.98. Season's greetings from Pep Boys. That's traffic on KRXA.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're talking with journalist Douglas France and his wife, Catherine Collins, a powerful new book about A.Q. Khan, Pakistan's nuclear development guru. It's called The Nuclear Jihadist. And during the break, I looked it up. It's 12books.com is the website. And there's an audiobook available, too, if that's how you prefer to ingest the information. And, Catherine, let me turn to you next, because I was fascinated by the portrait your book paints of Benazir Bhutto, who many people hold a lot of aspirations for in the current mess in Pakistan. But the picture you paint of her terms as prime minister in the 90s was either that she was highly duplicitous when she came to the United States and said, oh, no, we're not working on a nuclear bomb. At the same time, she seemed captive to the generals in Pakistan who treated her like a little girl and said, well, you don't really need to know about this stuff. Just do what we tell you.
That's a very good portrayal of her situation. Yes, the military, and we have this from several sources and former military people, that they really didn't trust Benazir Bhutto. She was Western educated, and they didn't want to put their nuclear weapons in the hands of a Western educated woman, of all things. And so when she came to power the second time in 1993, she was determined to work things out with the military. And at that point, she turned to A.Q. Khan. He knew that she was going on a state visit to China, and he asked her to make a stop, just a short stop along the way in North Korea, in order to pick up some plans for him. So she was willing to do that. She went to North Korea. She had a state dinner, was welcomed in the streets with huge parades, and carried back to Pakistan for Khan these plans, for missiles. And at that point, she said to him, now you know you shouldn't use these. You shouldn't develop these unless India goes ahead and develops them first. And he said, of course not. And then, of course, he left her office and went right ahead with this. So she knew what he was up to, and she always denied that they had exchanged this information and that she had bought it instead. Mm-hmm. But you were referring also to a time when she visited in the States, and she looked Congress in the eye in the 80s and said, no, Pakistan will never develop a bomb, yet the very next day, she was shown a scale model of the bomb by the CIA. Mm-hmm. And she was forced to admit that, yes, they did have some work done on it, but they would not go any further.
And Douglas France, when General Musharraf seized power in a coup in 1999, you describe him as somewhat uneasy with A.Q. Khan, but it took him a while to figure out exactly how to deal with him, and it took pressure from the United States to force his hand.
Yeah, it was. Khan presented a difficult problem for Musharraf. We're not sure, and nobody is really sure how much Musharraf and other Pakistani military and intelligence leaders knew about Khan's nuclear bazaar and the fact that he was providing technology to Iran, Libya, and North Korea. Certainly they knew something about his relationship with North Korea, and when he started with Iran in 1987, he certainly did so with a wink and a nod from the military commanders. But Musharraf's problem was he wanted to rein in Khan and the entire nuclear establishment, because basically Khan had done his job. He had taken the hardest task that faces anyone who wants to build a nuclear weapon, and that is to develop the fissile material. He'd set up this enormous uranium enrichment laboratory. He'd provided Pakistan with all the highly enriched uranium its nuclear weapons would ever need, and so Musharraf wanted to rein him in, but the problem for Musharraf was that Khan was more popular than this general who had just taken control of the country in a bloodless coup.
And there's much more in the book. Our time is limited, forgive me. But there's much more in the book about the episode where Musharraf essentially sacks him and then pardons him. And I find it fascinating, but as an American, I'm so disappointed in the way our government responded and essentially, you know, accepted this house arrest as a resolution of the problems created by the largest, the single largest nuclear proliferator in our lifetimes. I want to sneak in a call from Matt in Sacramento. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, I'll make it quick. I still don't see why it's the white man's burden to have the atomic weapons when the rest of the world has denied them. I think they're the solution for all these little wars. Anyway, I know that's probably wrong, but okay.
Oh, so you like the Cold War model? The mutual, the MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction?
Well, that's what we've got.
All right, let's get a reaction. Go ahead,
Douglas. Boy, I really couldn't disagree more. I mean, I think where we come down in the end in this book is that the only way to resolve this problem between the nuclear haves and the have-nots is to get rid of all the nuclear weapons. But the idea that we set up all these little countries around the world with mutually assured destruction is impossible because, for instance, how do you have a mutually assured destruction arrangement with a terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda? You know, who do you blow up? We know.
Well,
Moscow launches. We know how to retaliate. We don't have any way to retaliate against terrorists.
It presumes that fallout can be controlled inside borders, and that's not a true fact. I want to thank you both. There's much more in the book, and perhaps we can ask you back and talk more about AQ Con. The book is The Nuclear Jihadist, Douglas France and Catherine Collins. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk to you both.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Zoe 101. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Jamie Lynn Spears, the good Spears, Britney's younger sister, Sweet 16, the star of Zoe 101 on Nickelodeon, a magnet for the 9 to 14 demographic, is going to be a mommy. It came out of the blue. Her boyfriend, Casey Aldridge, who she met in church, best place you could possibly meet a boyfriend, moved to California to be with her. And nobody could predict that of all the things that could happen, pregnancy could be one of them when you put an 18-year-old boy in the same place with a gorgeous 16-year-old girl, or any 16-year-old girl. On TV, Jamie Lynn plays Zoe, age 14, who's transferred to an all-boys boarding school where she becomes the smartest kid in the class, sending the message that girls can hold their own in a male world. And now many parents are concerned that Jamie being pregnant at 16 will send a very different message. Well, the message is different, all right, but it's the message that needs to be sent over and over again, which is that TV role models are fiction. If you really want to empower girls, have them job shadow a female gynecologist. And then after you do that, teach the real lesson of Jamie Lynn, which is that no one focuses on the boy when these things happen. It's the girl who gets held accountable. Even though in most states what happened here could get the boy arrested, it's the girl who's held accountable. You can go to an all-boys boarding school and become the brightest girl in the class, but it's a fact of life that all it takes for one of those boys to put you back in your place is to whisper sweet words at the prom and then forget to bring the Trojan, at which point you'd better have yours. And that's the first lesson of Zoe 101.
Are you thinking about buying one of those inexpensive memory foam mattresses? Think again. Tempur-Pedic is the only mattress made from authentic Tempur material. The one that shapes and contours to your body, guaranteeing a restful, rejuvenating night's sleep. Those knockoffs don't even come close. Call Tempur-Pedic today at 1-800-805-3495, and they'll send you a free video, a sample of the proprietary Tempur material, and a 90-day trial certificate. You won't get that from those other guys. Tempur-Pedic is the real deal. Call 1-800-805-3495.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start the kickoff with for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes and schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Jim's Restaurant is celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Join the party. Enjoy Jim's lunch specials for just $5.75 and dinner specials for only $6.50 per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
At Homescapes Carmel, we search far and near to find the best locally made, American made, and imported furnishings the world has to offer. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Beau and I scour the globe to find unique, unusual, and unmatched merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores, or visit homescapescarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the program where we proudly say that we're willing to consult with people who know much more than your humble host. And joining us this half hour is Asla Bali, an attorney in private practice in New York. She just completed a fellowship at Yale School of Law, where she wrote a report, a research project on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and its relationship to Iran. She also published in the Middle East Report in 2006, the U.S. and the Iranian nuclear impasse. She previously worked for the U.N. Center for Human Rights in Geneva and also for the West Bank and Gaza Country Department of the World Bank's Middle East and North Africa Division. Sorry, I'm trying to read this quickly. And she's also a doctoral candidate at Princeton right now. Welcome to our program, Asla Bali.
Thank you so much.
Nice to talk with you, and I am very impressed with your background and the study that you bring to these issues. And I wanted to just first ask you what your reaction was to the early December announcement of the new National Intelligence Estimate, which is about a 180-degree reversal from the one from 2005, which the Bush administration has been operating under and using to ratchet up the war talk and really threaten Iran in many ways.
You know, I obviously am not an insider to the Bush administration by any stretch, but my own take on the new National Intelligence Estimate is that it reflects some kind of a change of leadership in the intelligence community and at the Defense Department that suggests that analysts are now being protected from the kinds of political pressure that appear to have been emanating from the Vice President's office and the President's office in prior times during this administration. And so they have been sort of taken off the leash and are able to correct some of the past exaggerations of weak intelligence that the United States used to sort of build its policies with respect to Iran earlier. And I think this reflects some of the changes that have taken place since the last election in 2006, the departure of Donald Rumsfeld, the changes at the CIA, and so on. So I think that what we're seeing now is a sort of backstepping on the part of the Bush administration, and it seems as if it may be happening even through some degree of perhaps tension between the intelligence agencies, the Department of Defense, and the desires of other parts of the executive, including the President's office and the Vice President's office, since numerous reports have suggested, and again, I'm only now commenting on the basis of public information, but have suggested that both the President and the Vice President first may have known about this reevaluation on the part of the intelligence agencies as early as late summer, which is to say prior to their pronouncements this fall regarding Iran, in which they made comments about the possibility of World War III or, you know.
And that may explain one of the reasons that Cheney had to go into the hospital and have his pacemaker reset.
Yes.
Maybe he blew things out of whack in those arguments of the White House. We're led to believe that in October there were some pretty serious discussions that may have gotten quite heated between intelligence experts and the vice president and his staff. And we can only imagine that Cheney was saying, oh, come on, this ruins everything.
Right. I mean, actually, I think it is kind of worth reminding ourselves of where both the president and the vice president were in terms of their public pronouncements in October. So I think around October 17th, the president said, if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing Iran from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon.
Well, and there are two very important parts of that. A, that, you know, he referenced World War III, and B, that he changed the standard to, quote, knowledge of how to make a nuclear weapon.
That's right. And this is actually what the Iranians have been arguing throughout, that the goalposts are constantly shifting and that no amount of compliance is going to be adequate to satisfy the United States. And basically what they're saying is that if the standard is we can't conduct scientific research in our country or we can't have knowledge related to the uses of nuclear energy, because simply having the knowledge represents, from the perspective of the United States and its allies, a threat, then that's a totally unacceptable standard. That has been their position. They've claimed that this is, you know, basically about colonialism, about denying the developing world knowledge and access to technology and so on. And, you know, given their own past of imperial intervention in their country, you know, one can understand that anxiety on the part of the Iranians, that it's only fed by the president suggesting a standard which nowhere appears, obviously, in international law or in any obligation that the Iranians have ever agreed to, which is to deny them access to knowledge. But it may also reflect, you know, some early sign that, indeed, the president was aware of the new evaluation, right? Because here you have the president threatening World War III on the grounds that they're not permitted to have access to knowledge. He's not even talking about actually producing a weapon anymore, and maybe he's not talking about it because he knew that the intelligence agencies had already come to the determination that nothing like that was going on at this point in Iran.
Asla Bali, that really echoes the way he shifted the rationales for the invasion of Iraq.
That's right.
And ultimately by, what was it, the 2005 State of the Union message, it was about weapons-related program activities. That's a long way from WMD.
Right. That's exactly right. And, I mean, even weapons-related program activities don't appear to have been taking place in Iraq. So, I mean, really what the redescription has been is, you know, this was about regime change, this was about ending a tyranny, et cetera, and that's exactly what the Iranians fear as well, which is, you know, ultimately all of this is pretextual, and it's all about the fact that we don't like the regime that's running the country and therefore plan to topple it by hook or by crook, whether or not there's a pretext related to nuclear weapons. I mean, that has been their position, and the response that President Bush and the Vice President have had since the publication of the unclassified portions of the National Intelligence Estimate, you know, suggests that the Iranians have plenty of room to continue feeling that anxiety, since nothing about the NIE has led the president, at least, to reverse his position on the kind of threat he deems Iran to represent.
Asla Bali, with your knowledge of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, in your view, has Iran been in compliance with the treaty that it is signatory to?
Well, again, I mean, one can only know so much about what's actually happening in the Iranian nuclear program, but the basic terms of compliance with the NPT itself as a treaty is the non-diversion of nuclear materials to militarized uses by non-nuclear weapon states. And the IAEA has consistently found that there's no evidence of a diversion of nuclear materials in Iran to military purposes. So as far as their compliance, at least the principal agency with inspectors on the ground, there has been no finding that Iran has failed to comply with its NPT obligations. Now, it has failed to comply in the past with its obligations under an related agreement, the Safeguards Agreement, which is an agreement governing the amount of information they need to provide and the timing of the information they need to provide to the International Atomic Energy Agency. And the Iranians have a set of arguments about why they didn't scrupulously adhere to the letter of the law on that agreement, which is that the United States was at pains to deny them their rights under the treaty, namely their right to access civilian nuclear technologies for an energy program.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, they are referring to the fact that the United States systematically intervened every time Iran tried to acquire components for a nuclear energy program on open markets, to block those contracts from going through, even though as a signatory of the NPT, Iran did indeed have the right to acquire those technologies and try to pursue a nuclear energy program. In fact, that's the very basis of the bargain at the heart of the NPT, is that non-nuclear countries, particularly in the developing world, are free to develop nuclear energy programs so long as they agree never to develop a nuclear weapon. And so when Iran was frustrated in its efforts to try to get open market access to civilian nuclear energy technologies, they went to the black market, and they claimed that they couldn't reveal their sources to the IAEA because if they did, they would lose the one opportunity they had to develop a nuclear energy program. And so, I mean, with respect to their primary NPT obligation, there has been no finding of noncompliance. There's no evidence that they have ever diverted nuclear material to weapons purposes.
And just before you joined us, we were talking with the co-authors of a new book about AQ Khan called The Nuclear Jihadist. And so we actually touched on the way that he sold plans and centrifuges and other things to Iran over the years.
That's right.
We're talking with Asla Bali here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, you can join us. She's with us till the top of the hour. 888-5-PETER-B. That's our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. Tell me your thoughts about the recent messages coming out of Bush and Cheney, which demand that Iran come clean. Now, our national intelligence estimate indicates that Iran stopped its nuclear weapons program in about 2003. In that same time frame, there were overtures from Tehran to Washington that were ignored, rebuffed, and ridiculed, if you will. And yet now the Bush message is that they have to prove, A, that they had a program, and B, that they have suspended it. Now, I recognize that our intelligence is not the equivalent of hard facts. It appears to be based on a defecting Iranian general who expressed the concern of other generals who were angry that the weapons program had been stopped. But isn't this a demand that Iran prove a negative?
Yes, and it's reminiscent, again, of the Iraq War. I mean, again, Iraq was also under compulsion to prove a negative, and it is actually very difficult to prove a negative, as it turns out, although the IAEA and the weapons inspectors from the UN in the Iraqi case came pretty close to proving the negative. I mean, Iraq was told, you have to prove to us that you have destroyed all weapons you ever had, and by the way, we don't believe or and we're not prepared to rely on your account of which weapons you had. So it was effectively a catch-22. It was pretty much impossible, and yet, by virtue of having an incredibly invasive inspections regime for over a decade on the ground in Iraq, inspectors came pretty close to having, you know, covered every inch of Iraqi soil to say, we can't find evidence of weapons of mass destruction. Now, even that degree of evidence in proving a negative proved to be insufficient to deter the United States in launching an attack on Iraq, as we know. So from the Iranian perspective, to begin with, they have that precedent, and their view is no amount of compliance with inspections is really going to deter you if what you want to do is change our regime. So A, we have little incentive to comply. B, we have been complying. I mean, the most recent IAEA report, which was in November of this year, 2007, I think the public portion was released on the 15th of November, found that the Iranians have actually been pretty honest, generally speaking, on their nuclear program and forthcoming, and that they have only reduced cooperation with the agency following U.S. efforts to impose sanctions, because their view is, if you're going to impose sanctions on us, you're going to penalize us while we're cooperating. You're leaving us with no incentive to cooperate. So not only in answer to your question is it a demand to prove a negative, and moreover, they're asking for levels of information that Iran would no doubt view as compromising their national security. I mean, the United States got lists of contacts, every contact they've had, all of the, you know, management structure of their military and so on. But moreover, they have very, very little incentive to comply, given that they're already being subjected to punitive sanctions, and they were never rewarded for the degree of cooperation they offered.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this, again, comes back to the Iraq model, where there were a game of chicken was played, where Saddam was bluffing Washington, oh, yeah, I've got WMD, so don't invade, and Washington was bluffing that they had, you know, real knowledge that Saddam had WMD.
That's right.
And so this double bluff led to a series of incredible historic miscalculations, and, you know, I have no brief for Saddam Hussein. But we didn't need to go in there and knock over his government and occupy that country. And it's really clear in hindsight that this was a gross series of errors. And while we've pulled back from the brink, I'm not satisfied that Bush and Cheney don't still have some intention to militarily confront Iran.
I think that is true, unfortunately, that while it has become much less likely, I think, in light of the NIE, that a military confrontation will occur sometime soon, it's not off the table. It's not off the table, as we can see, first of all, on the basis of the actual official statements by the president and the vice president in response to the NIE, and also from the actions. I mean, for example, the Annapolis conference, which went forward, or convention, as they called it, was clearly at least had the secondary, if not the primary, focus of seeking to build and reinforce an alliance to contain and eventually confront Iran, which I think is unfortunate for two reasons. First of all, it's once again a missed opportunity to engage in negotiation instead of confrontation with Iran. I mean, you know, excluding a party to the conflict, I think, is a mistake in general when you're trying, if you really care about accomplishing peace. And secondly, it's a shame for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and its prospects for resolution that it's been instrumentalized in this way as part of some kind of a grand strategy with respect to Iran. So, you know, overall, I don't think the possibility of a military confrontation is off the table, unfortunately. I do think the likelihood of garnering any international support whatsoever for such an option is, however, off the table, I don't think. So the United States, possibly together with Israel, would stand alone in attempting any kind of a military confrontation with Iran. But that's about the only outcome, I would say, certain outcome of the NIU's publication. Otherwise, a military confrontation, I think, is we can't completely discount that possibility.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Asla Bali. If you have a question or comment, call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Now let's take a look at your Friday getaway traffic as we approach the Christmas holiday. And a lot of folks are indeed getting away. Let's tell you that we do have a problem right here in Monterey. Southbound 1 at Munras, it's a two-vehicle crash. Everything's off to the right shoulder of the off-ramp at this point. In fact, CHP is on scene. Traveling in the Gilroy area, you'll witness a crash with major injuries on Gilman Road at Holsklaw. It's a vehicle and a bicycle involved in this accident. We do have a fire department and paramedic units on scene there handling that situation. Also police there as well. Other than that, we're going to hit you with some slow traffic, pockets of slow-and-go traffic, southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel. Traveling eastbound 25, it slows out of Gilroy into Hollister. Well, now at Staples, you'll find the largest selection of original Dell ink and toner, plus a wide selection of Dell laptops, desktops, printers, and monitors. See it, touch it, take it with you. Staples, that was easy. That's traffic on KRXA.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree. We have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start the kickoff with the, for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes. Schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmel Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid Carmel Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmel Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid Carmel Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 8 minutes in front of the hour. Next hour, Brad Friedman joins us as usual. We're going to talk about election issues. And our special guest today is Carolyn Cernich. She's the Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County, California. I think cats who want to attack Iran are absolutely crazy. And as we just heard from Asla Bali, she doesn't believe that the threat is entirely behind us. Now, can you imagine a scenario where Iran does something sufficiently provocative that the U.S. could unilaterally conduct some sort of military assault on Iran in an election year? I mean, this gets really complicated in a lot of different ways.
Yes, it does. That's true. I think that it's unlikely for Iran to do something provocative that leads to such an attack. I think the likelier scenario, and by the way, I mean, I do think one danger of the NIE, there are two problems that the National Intelligence Estimate raises. One is it has established more or less in the minds of Americans, I think at least, as fact, the idea that Iran had a weapons program until 2003. I think that's very much in question, and I would, you know, I think we would need to see the classified sections of the report.
Well, come on, if they'll come clean.
Right. So that's one part. And then the second part is that it may actually cause the Iranians to overplay their hand a little bit, and that then it is possible that something provocative might come out of Iran. On the other hand, I mean, Iran has shown tremendous pragmatism and basically ideological flexibility in its tense relationship with the United States over the last 5 or 6 years, including, as we've seen in the face of American claims that Iran is supplying weapons in Iraq, for example. You've seen Iran, you know, step in and try to rein in the Mahdi army and others to try to get the breathing room that the United States was arguing for with the surge. I mean, in many respects, I think ironically and behind the scenes in ways that Americans may not notice on a daily basis, Iran has actually been helpful as opposed to harmful to U.S. efforts in the region and has sought to do everything other than provoke, from what I can see.
Let me ask your point here. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
sure.
Many people speculate or offer an analysis that these moves on the part of the United States really represent the national interest of Israel. And we have critics on the program who feel that U.S. policy is overly paralleled with the interests of Israel and that our confrontation with Iran is overly influenced by that.
Yes. I mean, I'm not very convinced by simplistic analyses that reduce American policy to the Israeli interests in particular. But what is clear is that the direction that U.S. policy takes on the basis of American national security interest in the region is certainly heightened and maybe raised to a different level with the contribution of the Israeli interests that happen to converge in many respects. So I think the United States' main concern about Iran has nothing to do with Iran's military capabilities, be they nuclear or otherwise. They're infinitesimal, obviously, when compared to America's military profile in the region. It's rather the shifting of the balance of power in the region in the direction of strengthening Iran's influence, which, ironically, again, is a consequence of America's own policies elsewhere. In other words, by virtue of engaging in the Iraq War, we toppled Iran's greatest adversary in the region. We also eliminated the Taliban regime, another adversary of Iran, and we enabled the Shia community in Iraq to take a very strong role in the government of the new state, which has, you know, emboldened Shia communities, minorities throughout the region, further enhancing Iran's influence. And so these are results not of anything Iran has done to heighten its own military profile. This is a direct consequence of American actions. And I think now both the United States and Israel for a variety of reasons, deeply regret those implications of America's war in Iraq.
And just
very
one
concerned to contain Iranian influence. I think that's what's really driving both of their sets of policies.
And what about the summer of 2006 when Israel's invincibility suffered a big setback because Hezbollah didn't really lose in the battle in Lebanon?
Well, I think the interesting thing about Israel's own distorted perception of its policies and therefore also the United States is that while we're constantly focused on the existential threat faced by Israel, in point of fact, Israel represents an existential threat to almost all of its neighbors, specifically Lebanon. And when you engage in that kind of war, the war that Israel fought, which essentially the goal was, the maximal goal was to eliminate completely, existentially eliminate this entity, the chances are they're going to fight a lot harder than you're willing to yourself, and they're going to be willing to absorb a lot more sacrifice and cost than you are, because ultimately your objective is not about your survival, but your goals are about their survival. I think that's the lesson Israel learned, and that would also be equally true if we were to seek to attack Iran. That is, we are upping the degree of their anxiety about their own national security to such a level that they will be willing to absorb costs that we won't be, and that's going to be enough to let them win. I mean, that's how Hezbollah went. It didn't win militarily. It just won a stamina and endurance test because they were able to absorb a lot more cost than the Israelis were on their end. But, I mean, the only scenario that I can see, going back to your earlier question about a provocation, could Iran engage in a provocation that would lead to a unilateral U.S. military strike? I highly doubt that scenario. But a scenario that may be a little more plausible is that an Israel concerned about the implications of the NIE lowering the threat profile of Iran and taking Iran off the agenda for now of the Bush administration, and with an impending election and uncertainty about who may come into office and what kind of posture that new administration would take with respect to Iran, might, you know, do something provocative itself. I mean, already the Israelis are very concerned, have expressed their concerns about the implications of the NIE. They've urged a strong position be taken on Iran. They have had their ambassadors go out and say basically that unless Iran completely ends its enrichment program, that it will still face potential military action, etc. So in that position, if the Israelis were able to find a pretext to engage in some kind of action against Iran, that would more or less obligate the United States, I think, given the United States' current...
Asla Bali, I'm sorry, our time has run out, but it's a pleasure to talk with you, and I'd like to do it again.
I hope we get the chance.
Thanks for joining us today.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp. This God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. There's a lawsuit in the works, even talk of criminal charges against a health insurer that only approved a teenager's liver transplant when she was too far gone. KNX Radio's Aiden Pickering has the story from Los Angeles.
They took my daughter away from me.
Krikor Sarkisian, father of 17-year-old Nataline Sarkisian, appeared at a news conference where attorney Mark Geragos told reporters Cigna Healthcare had relented too late, agreeing under mounting pressure to a liver transplant for the 17-year-old leukemia patient who by then was too sick.
15 minutes after Cigna finally relented and agreed to provide a liver transplant, Nataline was taken off of life support.
Attorney Geragos says he'll sue and ask the district attorney to file criminal charges. Aiden Pickering, CBS News, Los Angeles.
There's been no comment from Cigna except to say its deepest sympathies are with the girl's family. A federal judge in Washington today heard arguments on whether the Justice Department can be trusted to investigate the destruction of those CIA interrogation videotapes. David Reams is an attorney for detainees at Guantanamo Bay.
Our argument was that the destruction of the CIA videotapes raised legitimate questions and grave concerns about the government's handling of evidence generally that is being used in the Guantanamo cases.
He says the courts should take over the investigation because the Justice Department may have sanctioned the destruction of the tapes. More on the hearing from CBS News correspondent Dan Revive.
Judge Henry Kennedy raised the hot-button issue but did not press for immediate answers as to who, how, and why the CIA destroyed some videotapes. Federal lawyers argued those interrogations were not at the Guantanamo camp, and the lawsuit Kennedy is presiding over is about Guantanamo detainees. The Bush administration also asked for no disruption to inquiries underway into why the tapes were destroyed. The judge said he'd take all this under advisement.
Big problems in Chicago as Christmas travel gets underway. Dense fog has forced the cancellation of more than 200 flights at O'Hare. At the closing bell on Wall Street, the Dow was 205 points higher at 13,450. The market reacted primarily to a government report that consumer spending was sharply higher in November. But CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says this optimism might not carry over into 2008.
We're still going to have the same old problems in the new year. The housing market won't be recovering anytime soon. Oil prices at this level appear to be here to stay, at least for the time being. So what we may get in the new year is finally an end to the big banks announcing that they're losing billions of dollars because of the mortgage mess. And the worst for the banks may be behind us in early 2008.
The price of oil topped $93 a barrel today. This is CBS News.
Don't get stranded this winter with a dead battery. Pep Boys is here to help. For a limited time, when you buy a quality Bosch battery, you'll get $10 off after mail-in rebate and exchange. Every Bosch battery also includes a 3-year free jumpstart service. Do it yourself, or let the Pep Boys experts do it for you. You save either way. Don't miss the hundreds of other great holiday values in this week's circular or at PepBoys.com. The Pep Boys holiday savings event is going on now. Season's greetings from Pep Boys.
Hey, it's Ty Pennington. This holiday, I'm all about granting wishes. So time's running out, but you want to come out of the holidays looking golden? How about fine jewelry? The entire stock is 40 to 60% off at the Sears Last Minute Wish Sale. And remember, when you order gifts at Sears.com and pick up in store, they'll be ready in 5 minutes guaranteed. So find something special that'll take a real shine to at Sears, Friday through Christmas Eve. And don't just give a gift, grant a wish.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/07.
As lakes dry up in the southeast, they've become a tempting target for grave robbers. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula has the story.
The state is being robbed blind. That's according to South Carolina State archaeologist Jonathan Leader. He's talking about the macabre black market for skulls, bones, and artifacts from century-old graves. The state's worsening drought is exposing once-submerged graves in the massive man-made Lake Merion. Graves recently uncovered by dry lake beds have become a target of thieves. One South Carolina state senator calls it the most despicable act possible. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
One of the last American veterans of World War I has died. Russell Coffey, who spent his last years at a nursing home in North Baltimore, Ohio, was 109. Coffey never saw combat. He was still in basic training when the war ended in 1918. He became a teacher in civilian life. Coffey wished people wouldn't focus on his age. He said, even a prune can get old. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Get in the zone. AutoZone. Looking for the perfect gift for the do-it-yourselfer on your list? Then get to AutoZone. Right now at AutoZone, get the Great Neck 18-volt rechargeable cordless power drill for the unheard-of low price of just $12.99. You heard right, just $12.99. And while you're at AutoZone, don't forget to pick up some AutoZone gift cards. Start early and shop AutoZone for all your holiday gifts.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Hey, it's Ty Pennington. This holiday, I'm all about granting wishes. So time's running out, but you want to come out of the holidays looking golden? How about fine jewelry? The entire stock is 40 to 60% off at the Sears Last Minute Wish Sale. And remember, when you order gifts at Sears.com and pick up in store, they'll be ready in 5 minutes guaranteed. So find something special they'll take a real shine to at Sears, Friday through Christmas Eve. And don't just give a gift, grant a wish.
Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/07.
on the left coast. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Last hour of our last live broadcast in 2007. Next week, you'll hear the best of Peter B. Collins, Christmas Eve, our holiday music festival, except in Portland, where you can log on to peterbcollins.com to catch the live stream. This is U2. It's called Peace on Earth. Actually, Bono, I'm sick of your sunglasses.
Sick of sorrow. Sick of the pain. Sick of hearing again and again.
And every week we cap it off with an hour with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, our go-to guy on election protection issues. He's the citizen journalist who brings you excellent coverage of these matters at bradblog.com. And I've got it up in the classic green and yellow today, Brad.
Oh, very nice.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. And boy, the last broadcast of 07, eh?
Yeah, well, it is. We're winding down. And Brad, you have had an incredibly busy week. I mean, you've been covering the court case in Pima County, Arizona. You put up an exclusive interview with Ohio Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner. There's breaking news from Colorado and Florida, and we're going to try to cover as much of it as we can this hour. But it is time to dump our Diebold stock, right, and take those losses and just move on?
Well, I'll tell you, it was time apparently several months ago when the several of the officers of the company dumped theirs, because today it hit a five-year low. I'm sure you're sad to hear it. Something like $29 a share.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you haven't dumped your Diebold stock already, do it now. But, frankly, you should have done it months ago at this rate. Unbelievable. They're now under DOJ investigation, as well as previously SEC investigations, securities fraud suit, and, of course, one study after another that I suspect we'll get to later in the hour, showing that, what do you know,
mm-hmm.
their machines don't work.
Yeah.
I wish I had told you that before.
Well, Brad, back on November 30th, I originated live from the Eureka Theater in Eureka, California. You, of course, were on the air with me. And Carolyn Cernich, who is the Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County, called in at that time, and we asked her to join us again on the program, and she's kind enough to be here with us today. Carolyn Cernich, thank you.
Thank you.
And I expand on that thank you because not every election official is willing to talk to me or to folks in the activist community. And I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Speculating on behalf of your other counterparts, why is it that some people who conduct elections think that the public is a nuisance?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I don't see them that way. That's particularly those interested in the integrity of elections, because we founded the Elections Advisory Committee based on my feeling that the public should have some input, give me some of their thoughts on the way our elections should go.
Mm-hmm. Now, give us a quick sketch, if you would, of what your current protocols are and what will be occurring in the presidential primary February 5th, the June primary, and the November general election in terms of how you will accept votes from the public, whether you're using machines or paper ballots, how they are counted and tabulated, and just a quick sketch of that process, if you'd be kind enough.
Sure. We have used optical scan Premier, Global when we first acquired them, then that changed to Diebold, and now it's Premier voting system for optical scan only. When I took office as the Registrar of Voters in 2002, my predecessor had on my desk that day an RFP that was to go out for the purchase of a complete new election system that would be touchscreens. About the next day, two constituents came into my office and expressed concern about the use of touchscreen voting machines, unaware that I had before me this RFP. And so I decided it was time to educate myself about what are the pressing issues, what are the values that we need to instill in our elections here.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, that RFP for touchscreen voting equipment never left my desk. It was never issued, and we continued with the paper ballots. And that's mm-hmm. one thing that I have committed myself to, that we will have paper ballots in Humboldt County.
Okay.
Now, with one exception to that is that with HABA, we had to include some approved method of allowing voters with disabilities access to the polling place like everybody else. And I'm
mm-hmm.
sure you know
right.
the HABA requirement.
One more question from me,
yes.
and then I'll turn it over to Brad for a minute.
Sure.
What is your situation in terms of the Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen's top-to-bottom review and the change in her certification of certain machinery? Does that affect your op scans or any other aspect of your voting system?
Very little compared to other counties in California. We were on track, thanks to the Elections Advisory Committee, who helped me make the decision that we would use the Hart InterCivic eSlate for our accessible device. So we had only one. We became minimally compliant with HAVA by having only one accessible voting machine per polling place, and the rest was done at precinct-level optical scan.
All right, Brad, go ahead.
A couple of points here. First, I want to actually echo what I had mentioned to Carolyn last week or a couple of weeks ago, that applaud her essentially for her willingness to talk to not just folks like you and me, Peter, but to citizens up there and the Election Advisory Board. Is that a citizen election advisory board, Carolyn?
Yes, it is.
And what have you taken away from the input that they have given you? What input have they brought you that has changed the way you administer elections up there?
Well, one thing that has been, I was very fortunate with this committee, and I think anybody would envy me for this. I had citizens who not from all walks of life who came to this, and not only were able to say, "This is awful. We have a problem. This is dishonest. We don't like this." But they said, "I think we have a problem here. Let's think of a solution together." And so a couple members of that committee, Kevin Collins in particular, sat down with me and said, "You know, we need to achieve some transparency. And this, I'm very proud of this, and this is something that I'm very excited about." We developed together, it started with a conversation that Kevin Collins and I had, and then expanded to the rest of the committee from there, other members individually too. But the Transparency Project started with the idea of, how about if we lay ballots on something like a conveyor belt before we feed them into a counting machine, and take their picture, so that we can make sure that what comes out the other end,
yeah,
by way of the count that the machine coughs up, is what actually went into it.
And Carolyn, don't you also conduct audits at a higher rate than is required?
Yes, we do.
Did you do that program where you photographed the ballots as they were going into the scanner?
Well, to a very small extent. There were a couple of snags with it that we've been working out. My counsel advised me that you can't do that because ballots are not public record. But let me back up a little bit first.
Mm-hmm.
From this taking pictures of it and, you know, letting somebody look at them, we started talking about, well, wait a minute, by letting them roll on a conveyor belt into this machine that will count both sides of them, the photograph you're going to get is going to be only of one side. So let's move from that maybe to a scanner and have all of them scanned. And that is where it kind of caught fire, that we want to scan all of the ballots and make them available either on CD or DVD or even over the Internet to anybody that wants to count them using any method they want to use to count them, be that hand counting, be that the development of open source software. And Bev Harris herself showed me a program on her laptop that Harry Hursty designed with our program in mind to count those ballots. And that was developed in open source. He didn't want to release that until we actually have the ballots available to the public for fear of it being altered somehow and someone else, you know, trademarking it or copywriting it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. I have seen that, and I know it's out there, but it's not publicly available yet.
All right. I need to take a break here. We'll continue in just a moment. We're talking with Carolyn Cernich. She is the Registrar of Voters for Humboldt County, California. Brad Friedman with us per usual here. Lines are open if you'd like to join the discussion. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. You can also send an email to peter@peterbcollins.com.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ah!
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. I'll have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
And let's take a look at your Friday getaway Christmas holiday traffic as you folks go to your destinations. And let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now. It is in Monterey, southbound 1 at Munras, a crash with two vehicles. In fact, everything is off to the right shoulder of the off-ramp at this point. CHP does remain on scene. Sand City, southbound 1 at Fremont Boulevard, a two-car crash. It's on the right shoulder of the off-ramp there. Also want to take a look at San Juan Batista, San Juan Canyon Road at Hillside. We have a cow apparently walking in the lanes there, so heads up travelers in that area. Southbound 1 slows between Monterey and Carmel in pockets at this point. Eastbound 129 slow between Watsonville and Aromas, so be aware there. Well, kids need time to imagine, play, and dream up in their own worlds. And there's one place you can count on for toys and games which will inspire their imagination. Toys R Us, time for childhood. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Brad Friedman is with us from bradblog.com, Carolyn Cernich, the Registrar of Voters in Humboldt County, California, and we're taking your phone calls too at 888-5-PETER-B. Dave Berman is on the line. He, of course, is with the Voter Confidence Committee in Humboldt. He was with us at the live broadcast in Eureka at the end of November. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Peter, Brad, Carolyn, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. And, Dave, the thing that you talked with us about at the end of November is your tool. It's a software program that helps analyze the cost and the time required to hand count paper ballots. And this, of course, is one of the moves, the intentions of the election integrity movement, is to try to get away from computers that could be hacked or other systems that are not entirely secure and essentially go back to the good old days of reliability. It might take a little longer, but what we really want is accuracy over expediency. And talk a little bit about the tool and the way you have used it to try to estimate what it would take to convert back to hand-counting paper ballots.
Right. It's not any kind of unusual software. It's Microsoft Excel, so it's just a spreadsheet. And what we've been able to do is kind of lay out the field of variables that would be involved in planning for an election. Really, I would think conducted under any number of ways, but we're suggesting that if you know the number of contests on the ballot, the number of polling places, the average number of ballots cast per polling place, and really a small number of other variables, you can plug this into the spreadsheet, and what you will get as a result is this estimate of how long it would take a certain number of people to count, and then what it would cost to pay these people to do the counting. And mm-hmm. we were moved to develop this kind of forecast tool because we discovered back in May, just prior to releasing a report on election conditions in Humboldt County, that the county did not seem to have any comparative data showing the differences between running a hand-counted election and an op-scan election. So mm-hmm. we were looking to kind of think the way that we thought the county should be thinking.
Okay.
In other words, we thought it was responsible for, you know, they would be responsible if they were able to show a comparison, and they couldn't. So we mm-hmm. tried to set out to do that.
So, Carolyn Cernich, what is your reaction to this, and what kind of feedback would you give Dave?
Well, I have looked at his Excel program, and there are a number of things that I can think of that, from my experience, that aren't included there. For example, I'm not sure how they came up with the number of seconds needed to count each contest on each ballot. Which includes 20 minutes training, apparently, is 6 seconds. Now, depending on the method that you use to count them, whether you're counting all of the ballots one time or counting all of the ballots for just one race
Understood.
At a time.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at some of our local races where you might have 12 candidates and elect three. That's going to take a lot longer than 6 seconds for each ballot.
All right, Dave, what's your reaction there?
Well, the figure 6 seconds came from New Hampshire, where they've got a long history of hand counting, and still 45% of their polling places hand count, and their election administrators all the way at the top, you know, the Secretary of State, the Assistant Secretary of State, they are basically ambassadors for hand counting.
And 55% of their counties then use optical scan?
Well, it is a choice that's left to the jurisdiction, apparently. It's not mandated by the state that they do it one way or the other. But the number 6 seconds was provided basically in a presentation that was given by New Hampshire Assistant Secretary of State Anthony Stevens back in the summertime this year. Mm-hmm. And it was that presentation, not just that particular data point, but the entire presentation that allowed me to conceive of all of these variables having a formulaic relationship between them that we could use in a spreadsheet.
Okay, that's one issue. What else, Carol?
But wait, one other question I have, Mr. Berman, is New Hampshire is one of several states that have a slate ticket. Was that a factor in just set aside all of those slate votes? Where California does not have that, and you have to look at every single ballot.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure that I can answer that question, but I would say that as far as 6 seconds being potentially low, one of the great things about this forecast tool is that you can change that from 6 to 10 or whatever number you think. I mean, that's what this is. It's a forecast tool. It's not meant to be you know, rigid and set. It's meant to help prepare and plan for.
So the formulas can be adjusted to reflect real data.
Right.
Well, yes. And, you know, recently the Voter Confidence Committee signed on to an amicus brief, a federal lawsuit that was in New York court yesterday. In fact, the Department of Justice forcing New York State to accept electronic voting machines. Mm-hmm. And part of the amicus brief that we were a part of proposed to the state that they order hand counting of the two federal races next mm-hmm. November on the ballot.
Okay, Dave, let me stop you there. Carolyn, we just have about 30 seconds remaining. Tell me what your thoughts are about how we can make this transition, and if you're open to it, if you can find the funding, the workers, and iron out the issues.
Well, you know, I first of all, let me say that I'm dedicated to the paper ballot. Because in the end, we have something that is, if necessary, we can hand count, and we do that in our audit procedures. I do not see hand counting as the panacea for all of the problems in elections, and I'm not sure that the counting part of the ballots is even the biggest problem with elections.
All right, I'm sorry our time is up, but thank you very much for joining us, Dave. I appreciate your input here, and we will talk again. Carolyn Cernich.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks.
More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Chrismukkah, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
I love coffee, I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia is the place for me. Coffee and tea, the honey and me. At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries. Or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
Jim Moore Income Tax in Watsonville has been helping Monterey Bay Area residents with personal income tax preparation for more than 20 years. And this year, Manager Juan Gonzalez is prepared to assist all taxpayers take advantage of tax credits and rebates especially targeted for the eco-minded. The staff of Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in fast professional income tax preparation at a very reasonable price. Do you have a naughty tax problem? Let Juan Gonzalez and his staff provide the expert assistance you need. Jim Moore Income Tax is located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. This year, let Juan Gonzalez show you where the green is for green living taxpayers. Visit Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville. Be sure to take copies of your 2006 tax return and all of your 2007 W-2s and 1099s. Remember Jim Moore Income Tax for all of your tax preparation needs.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
1, 2, 3,
My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and if I know for sure.
Shake it.
Continue on the PBC show. Brad Friedman is on the line and connected up with us from bradblog.com. And Brad, thanks for your indulgence there in the last segment. I wish we had more time for everybody to talk. And I think Carolyn Cernich is an interesting person. She seems open to different ways of doing things, citizen participation.
Yeah.
And I think Dave comes away a little disappointed that she doesn't quite fully embrace his hand-counted paper ballot plan at this time. But also, I don't feel she's rejecting it. She's looking to iron out bugs that she sees.
Well, yeah, and we did run short on time there. And the last time she was on, both times I had actually hoped to be able to ask. You know, I don't know that Dave Berman or really anybody else is necessarily suggesting that hand counting is some form of panacea, as she referred to it. But I wonder, since Carolyn has been willing to work as a bit of a laboratory up there, if you will, her willingness to try out the Harry Hursty plan she discussed, why she wouldn't be willing to try out, even if it was only in a few precincts, 10 or 5 or even 2, doing some hand counting up there, working with folks like Dave Berman, and developing some actual data for this stuff, and mm-hmm. let's find out how long it takes to count these ballots, as she was talking about, maybe just doing the federal races or something like that, It would be very interesting to get that data one way or another, and as she's shown herself willing to do stuff like that before, I would encourage her and Dave to work with her to see if that might be a possibility in these upcoming February elections.
Well, and even the June primary seems to be a little bit more of a potential for laboratory techniques, just because I think turnout will be pretty low. It'll be limited to state and local races, and the pressure to have it all counted on election night is not the same in an election of that nature.
Well, fair enough, but remember, I believe they're doing a precinct-based scanning out there, which means even if they did sort of parallel hand counting at the same time of a number of precincts, they would already have the numbers from the polling place of those ballots by the end of election day there that could be reported back to Central while they went ahead and moved forward with this experiment to hand count the paper ballots up there and see not only how long it takes, but how accurate their hand counting is in comparison to the Diebold op scanners they use.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, I hope Carolyn Cernich has heard this, and I do encourage you, Carolyn, to look at these ideas and see if there's a way you can make them work in Humboldt County. We've got one more caller from Humboldt, and then we'll move on to some of the other breaking news at Brad Blog this week. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot. This is Jim Lamport. I'm calling from Humboldt County.
Hi.
And I'm a member of the Elections Advisory Committee, along with Dave Berman and Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
Also an experienced poll worker here in Humboldt. And I just wanted to make a comment or two. First of all, let me preface my remarks by saying that I'm no blind enthusiast of digital technology. Not a day goes by when I don't curse out my computer and wish I could take out a base for that.
Yeah.
I think we all will admit that there are certain advantages with computer technology. You know, I actually do use a typewriter in my office, but occasionally when my computer won't do the job, and I don't think any of us wants to go back to typing when word processing is available. So given the thesis that computers are good for certain things, I just want to chime in and say that it seems to me that counting uniformly placed dots on thousands or tens of thousands or millions of identical pieces of paper is actually a very apt job for an optical scan computer.
Can I respond to that?
Please, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, and I don't agree with your general thinking there. That said, they are notoriously incorrect. They're notoriously wrong and in one election after another, and we have found that the idea that you're counting secretly using a secret software that the public can't look to, tends to take away the rights of the people to determine their own elections. Do you disagree with that?
Oh, I completely agree with that, Brad. I do agree with that. And, you know, we'd all prefer to have open source software. But until we have that, and even subsequent to that, I would just suggest our committee's transparency project is really a beautiful proposal and a beautiful remedy to any doubts that might creep into the system and the accuracy of the tabulation.
Well, and Jim, I don't know the extent of that transparency project, and I don't think either Peter or I are being critical of that work. I'm curious, would you be in support, hopefully you were on the line, you heard what I had mentioned before, would you be in support of a test lab situation, as it were, to count by hand in a number of precincts and see how that how those results go?
Sure, I wouldn't be opposed to that in principle whatsoever. The only hesitance I have is about the notion that hand counting is the only fully reliable, fully acceptable way to tabulate the ballots.
And, well, I don't think it's up to you or me or anybody else to determine what is the only acceptable way necessarily. All I'm suggesting is let's do it, let's try it, let's see what happens, and let's see if this is a workable idea, because you've got people up in arms, if you will, concerned about, justifiably concerned about these companies that we're giving millions and billions of tax dollars to. And if there's an alternative out there, why the heck aren't we trying it out?
Jim, let me ask you to make just one more point, because I need to give Brad time to cover a lot of other stories, and I'm just trying to balance here.
So did you want me to comment on one other issue? Or
yes, you said you had one other thing to mention, so I wanted to give you that opportunity.
Well, if I did, it's gone completely out of my head. I just want to thank you for the program, and just want to give my vote of confidence to the system that's in place in Humboldt County. And I know for a fact that Carolyn Cernich is just doing a great job for the citizens and voters locally here.
All right. Very good, Jim. I appreciate that. And here's an email that came in from Dave Berman after he signed off the program. He said, the one thing I didn't get to say in the segment was that our effort to make these numbers available and understandable to the average voter is so that the public can judge the viability of our proposal for hand counting rather than just accepting the registrar's remarks about its potential. So thank you, Dave. I appreciate that. Brad, any final comment there, or shall we move on to Ohio?
Well, I guess we can move on. I have no doubt we will pick that up after the first of the year, because those guys are working hard up there. And I should add the thanks to Jim, because he is on that advisory committee for participating in his democracy up there.
Indeed. So last week, the news was breaking, and Victoria Parks joined us from Ohio. She had been to the news conference held by Secretary of State Jennifer Bruner, in which she talked about the results of her Everest review, and that stood for Evaluation and Validation of Election-Related Equipment Standards and Testing. And then his Bradness got an exclusive interview with Ohio's Secretary of State, and the details are at Bradblog. Tell us about it.
Well, we did indeed, and, you know, test itself, the Everest test itself, has been met with a lot of plaudits from all sides, aside from the Ohio Republican Party website,
who
took the opportunity to take some pretty ugly shots at Jennifer Bruner, saying she cooked up this report. Aside from that, she's gotten a lot of credit for the report itself, although a fair bit of criticism about her recommendations based on that report. And I discussed that with her in my interview. Thank you for mentioning it. It's currently still at the very top of the blog, an exclusive interview with her talking about the test and some of the concerns, specifically concerning her. She has recommended against the precinct-based optical scan that we've been discussing here, has recommended instead central-based op scanning for Ohio, which if anybody was paying attention to what happened in 2004, the chicanery that happened tend to be at the county level. And the idea of spreading around, decentralizing the counting, if you will, and posting at the polling place makes a lot of sense, not only to me, but other critics of her recommendations from the Brennan Center, from Cleveland State University, and elsewhere. It seems to have been somehow left out some of those advisors, some of those election integrity, election administration experts seem to have been left out of her study. And instead, you know, she looked at the recommendation of just the computer scientists, came up with, I think, some thoughtful recommendations, but perhaps not based on the full body of information out there. So I tried to challenge her a bit on that. I think I asked her some tough questions, and in the bargain asked her about some of the issues still, and there's lots of them, hanging out there from 2004 for which no one has been held accountable, including the infamous Warren County lockdown, when they locked out the press and the media, the public and the media, from being able to watch the tabulation on election night in one of the last counties to come in with their totals on election night. She said to me that, yes, she is still concerned about that and gave indications that she may, in fact, continue to pursue that, because, you know, I made the case to her that I know you got your eyes on 08, but if you don't bring accountability for what happened in 2004, the message sent to folks like Warren County and so many of these other counties where the same people are still in place is that, hey, you got away with it last time, you can get away with it next time as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, I was pleased that she seemed to indicate that she was open to perhaps investigating, taking some action there. And I see just before I came on the air here tonight that it looks like the I think it's the Cleveland Plain Dealer or the Columbus Dispatch, I'm not sure, has actually picked up on my interview there and her comments about Warren Kelly. Oh, it's the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Oh, God.
There we go.
What a terrible newspaper.
Well, in this case, they picked up. They were the ones who reported on what happened on Warren County. It was
right.
Their reporter who was kicked out.
Yeah.
So they picked up on my interview, ran a piece of it, and talked about the fact that Bruner is still open to bringing some accountability there, and they've also asked for anybody who might have additional insider tips to share it with them. So maybe we'll see something as we move ahead. And I'm also hopeful, but we'll see, but I'm hopeful that Bruner will change some of her recommendations that she's made, because some of them indeed are quite troubling there.
Well, and let's just talk about two before we take a break here. One, the OpScan, central OpScan system. How did she respond to your questions about that?
Well, you know, I was quite impressed. She didn't dodge them. She spoke to them all quite directly. And in fact, it seemed to me that her answers were very well considered. She was quite knowledgeable about this. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I was happy with that. What I've been able to learn through that interview with her and through subsequent information is that, you know, she was really relying on these computer scientists who looked at it and they said, well, the fact is these systems are so vulnerable that you have, you know, many fewer chances to access the computer, the tabulators themselves, if you, you know, only count them in one place.
Mm-hmm.
That much is true from a computer security standpoint.
Right.
But from an election integrity standpoint, when you spread around the counting throughout the precincts, and you know, and post those in all of the different precincts at the end of the election night, it makes it a lot harder to game those ballots once they make their way back to the county.
Mm-hmm.
She also, there's one other point here of note to me that I hadn't realized. She talked about the precinct-based scanners and the fact that apparently the counting mechanism, incredibly enough, can be turned off, the memory on these precinct-based scanners. So you can scan these ballots, and yet they're not counting anything. So you might, you know, scan 100 ballots throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
for example, but a poll worker could turn off the counting mechanism so that what you end up with is 100 ballots scanned, but only 70 of those ballots being counted. That's a kind of a troubling proposition. One would think it would be caught if there was a proper post-election audit,
mm-hmm.
but this is Ohio,
yes.
So who knows if there'll be audits at all, much less proper ones.
All right, we'll take a break and return with Brad Friedman in just a moment. 888-5-PETER-B and BradBlog.com. Those are the operative connectors. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
And TGIF, everybody. Of course, a lot of folks get away for the Christmas holiday. So let's give you a little look at what's going on. We have a problem in Aptos, south on 1 before SoCal Drive. Left lane blocked, the two-car crash. Santa Cruz County, we're looking at a problem. Summit Road west of SoCal, San Jose Road. It's power lines apparently hanging very low over the roadway, and CHP telling folks to drive with caution there. San Juan Batista, San Juan Canyon Road, Hillside, we have animals on the roadway, apparently a cow walking in the lanes. And Sand City, north on 1 at Fremont Boulevard, there's a solo spinout apparently on the ice plants area on the shoulder. And also, it looks like southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel, pockets of slow traffic. Well, it's the JCPenney Ultimate Christmas Sale. Stores stay open Friday and Saturday till midnight and open Saturday at 6 a.m. Go to jcp.com now to see everything on sale. That's traffic on KRXA.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services.
In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super green nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel, Staff of Life in Santa Cruz, and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz and Capitola. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show, brought to me by the Organic Wine Company. You love organic food, try organic wine. It's good for you, good for the planet, good for the farmers. Fewer pesticides all around. Log on to ecowine.com or call them toll-free at 888-ECO-WINE. That's 888-ECOWINE. And we got a call from Tom Unsicker's wife. Tom is the guy from Santa Cruz who's riding his bicycle with a payload of balls. He's going from Santa Cruz to Washington, D.C. to give courage to Congress. Yes, in the form of cojones. And let's see, he is in the L.A. area. He rode 110 miles yesterday. He started out in L.A. and is on his way into Banning. Tells a story of cheering Caltrans workers, egging him on, and said that he's met a lot of nice people and had an encounter with a dog, too. If you'd like to follow his progress, go to the website CourageToCongress.com. That's CourageToCongress.com, and drop him a note of encouragement. And we'll be back in touch with Tom on a daily basis when we return live on January 2nd here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. As we mentioned, he's been blogging feverishly and furiously this week. We're not going to have time to cover every major story, so when you have a chance, log on to bradblog.com and you can catch up on all the big news. And by the way, it is the end of the year, and when you're making those contributions, keep the Brad blog in mind. Brad works hard, and I don't think those banner ads generate more than about 25 cents a week. Am I right, Brad?
That's about right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that plug.
Okay. Now, how about Colorado? What's the news out of Colorado and the Republican Secretary of State?
Well, as I know we're running late, I'll try to speak quick. And as you did, point folks to bradblog.com for more details. When Jennifer Bruner, her study in Ohio came in Friday, well, a new study came in from Colorado on Tuesday, where a judge had previously decertified every voting machine that used in the state, because it turned out after a lawsuit discovered that there was almost no certification testing done whatsoever. So the new Republican Secretary of State there had been forced to retest these systems, came back and found about three-quarters of them were incredibly vulnerable. Surprise, surprise. He mentioned running a magnet over the screen and being able to wipe out the memory of some of these touchscreen systems. Interestingly enough, while a lot of them were decertified, one of them wasn't decertified. Those were the both the optical scan and touchscreen systems made by Diebold.
Oh, he must be a shareholder.
Well, close.
Yeah?
As it turns out, no one could really figure out why Diebold got a free pass, seeing as how their systems have been, you know, found to be in one study after another, you know, a disaster. Interestingly enough, the next day, we found out Mike Kaufman, the Secretary of State there, who is running for Congress this coming year, his campaign consultants happen to be the same consultants that Diebold has in Colorado.
Wow.
That's just a coincidence, of course.
Sure.
Astounding conflict of interest. Diebold spokesman said they knew nothing about it, however, and that it they can't imagine had any effect whatsoever, and then they promptly let that consultant company go. Mission accomplished, I suppose.
Yeah, that looks like it. All right, Pima County, Arizona. We checked in with them 2 weeks ago where there is a lawsuit proceeding. We got some interesting coverage of the trial, and now we have a decision.
Pima County, an interesting and mostly positive decision. The Democratic Party out there had been suing to get access to the database, the Diebold, once again, the Diebold voting database from 2006. They have questions that there may have been fraud in that election. The judge has gone ahead and allowed them to have the databases. Although they can't yet release it to the public, they've got to prove somehow the burden has been shifted to them, I'd say inappropriately, to prove that that information somehow won't, give away super secret codes to the public somehow so that they'll be able to hack elections in the future on Diebold machines. Of course, as you know, the elections officials who run that those elections out there, they get access to those codes and those super secret information. But whether the people will ever get to see them still remains to be found. But it's generally good news in that the Democratic Party out there has been allowed to have access to some of those databases. And we will see what we will find as things move forward. But I'd chalk that one up for now. In the victory column.
Mm-hmm.
We've had quite a few of them, I think, in the last week.
So John Tanner, the recovering racist, is still at the Department of Justice. Is he going to head up the investigation into Diebold?
Well, you know, he might, because he won't get out. He had resigned effective immediately, you'll recall, last Friday. And I'm hearing from my insider DOJ sources inside the voting section that he's still there. He won't leave. He was supposed to leave effective immediately last Friday. And in the past, there was cases of other employees that were similarly reassigned. And Tanner didn't give them any time at all. In one case, he gave him a recycling bin and 8 hours to get the hell out of the office. In another case, he didn't even let the guy clean out his desk. Someone else did it for him. In the meantime, Tanner is sitting around, I'm told, in his office still, playing on his computer and not talking to anyone. Has nothing to pack up in there, we're told. He's got just one filing cabinet, but he's still there a week later. And a secretary I spoke to today at the voting section said that he had left for the day, but that she expects he'll be back in next Wednesday when they get off holiday.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Just can't get rid of some of these losers. And a quick tip for Sacramento listeners, mark your calendar for January 15th. We'll have a special screening of the documentary Uncounted. There's an Oakland date, too, for January 17th. We'll talk about it in the new year. Brad, have a great holiday and happy new year to you and Desi.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day, a great one, and enjoy the 9 days of Hanukkah.
Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good. Just like an organic tomato or a strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
Krikor Sarkisian is a grieving father.
All I know, I don't have a daughter anymore, 17-year-old daughter anymore.
His daughter, Natalyn, died late yesterday at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, just hours after Cigna Healthcare reversed itself and approved a liver transplant. Now, as CBS News correspondent John Blackstone reports, there are plans for a lawsuit and a call for criminal charges.
Today, the family's attorney said he'll press for Cigna to be charged with manslaughter, even murder.
Cigna Health Corporation literally, maliciously killed her.
Natalyn's doctors told the insurance company 10 days ago her liver was failing. She needed a transplant to survive. But twice she was taken off the waiting list when Cigna refused to pay. In a brief written statement, Cigna says only that its deepest sympathies are with Natalyn's family.
Just three more days till Christmas, and it seems that people who aren't packing the malls are packing airport terminals for that flight home for the holidays. CBS News correspondent Harry Srinivasan reports.
Merry Christmas.
While Santa was spreading cheer through the Dallas-Fort Worth airport today, the Grinch was having his way elsewhere. Snows in Boston caused dozens of cancellations.
That's pretty disappointing for the boys who were really excited to see their grandparents.
It was a similar story in New York, Philadelphia, and New Jersey, where hundreds of flights were delayed by bad weather.
An utter defeat, as usual, by the aviation companies.
In Los Angeles, it was the sheer crush of holiday travelers that created long lines, delays, and missed flights.
I'm going to rent a car now and drive to Vegas to get to Fort Lauderdale to make my family reunion.
Good thing he's not going to Chicago. More than 200 flights at O'Hare have been canceled due to dense fog. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive covered a court hearing today on the CIA controversy.
This was the first time that the CIA's destruction of interrogation videotapes was brought up in a courtroom, but federal judge Henry Kennedy did not seem angry at government lawyers. He listened to their arguments that the interrogation tapes had nothing to do with the Guantanamo detainees who filed a lawsuit. That's the case Kennedy is presiding over. Kennedy issued no ruling, saying he'll take all this under advisement.
At a year-end